Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Touchdowns All Day podcast. I'm your host, John Barber, and I am happy to be back at work here doing episode 50 of the podcast. The podcast has undergone a lot of changes recently, and we are going to bring the podcast back in a slightly different form for you all to try and hit some of our marks. You know, let's get consistent with this thing and put out some episodes a little bit more regular. And the problem really has been, like, how do I do a regular podcast when I'm on the road doing all that stuff? And it's a lot. So we have decided to bring on podcasting superstar, Mr. Max Dawson. He's done a bunch of interviews with us here on the show. He's one of the first ever Disco Biscuit fans. He is a podcaster with many years of experience with his Survivor podcast that he did for many years. And he is 100% all in on making Touchdowns All Day the best podcast it could be. So we're now up and running. And we have a co-host, Mr. Max Dawson. I'm very excited about this. It's going to allow us to do podcasts. Maybe if I'm on tour, they can still get a podcast out. We're going to try that. Maybe if I'm on tour, they can make podcasts and I can be a part of them and do my on-air microphone personality type of stuff for y'all, but not have to do a lot of the other production aspects of making the podcast. And I'm very excited about this. This is going to be great. I think it's a more the merrier situation whenever we have large groups of people come on the podcast and do interviews. The round tables are a great example. I always think those are a lot of fun. They're great episodes. It's great content. And I'm excited. I'm very excited about this new era of Touchdowns All Day podcast. Crunk Mike, myself, Vic, and now Max Dawson are the team. And we're going to bring you high quality content based around Disco Biscuits, anything that we're doing in that world, that universe on a regular basis here. I think we're going to go for every other week to start, and then maybe we can slice that down to every week as we get more efficient, I guess is the word. I don't know what the right word is, but just we get better at it, you know, as we get better at it. Podcasting is a tough job for musicians, because when you're a musician like me, like the type of musician that I am, is when I'm writing music, I find it hard to do other things. I find other things to be incredibly distracting. And doing a regular podcast every other week while writing, I mean, how many songs have we written in the past year and a half? Like, it's been crazy. If you include the Very Moon songs, it's been insane. So there's a lot of work in songwriting that does, in my mind, require me to stay focused, and the podcast suffers from that. And then once the podcast gets, you know, put aside, then guess what? Months go by. Restarting it becomes a whole thing. So now we have Max and Crunk. They can literally do an episode without me. I mean, they're both very knowledgeable Disco Biscuit people. But I'm going to be on every episode. You know that. You know it. You know it, baby. So really excited about this. This is the inaugural Max Dawson episode. He's doing the interview on this. And I think that's terrific. He's got an interview with Mark Brownstein on this episode. And then on episode 51, he has an interview with Aaron Magner. And I listened to both interviews in total. And I thought Max did a terrific job. And one of the things that I noticed when I was interviewing Max, and it actually ended up the Max Dawson episodes, we broke them into two episodes. I think it was like 36 and 37, so it was maybe 2 years ago or something. And guess what? You know, Max knows everything about the band. He really does. And he represents the type of questions and curiosity that the fans, our listeners, you, the person who's listening to me right now, a lot of the things that you want to know, he knows this stuff. He knows to ask it. Whereas me, the guitar player, the guy on stage, I don't really know what y'all want to ask because I don't have that perspective. I've never been to a Disco Biscuit show. So I don't even know what y'all are going for. I have no idea. I just go do my thing. And now the podcast can survive when I go do my thing. The podcast can live on. And also the depth of the quality of the content of the podcast, I think, is going to go up exponentially because we are creating a bigger family here at the Touchdowns All Day podcast. So I want you all to welcome Mr. Max Dawson in his inaugural interview episode and give it a listen. You got Mark Brownstein being incredibly candid on this version, and then you have Aaron Magner talking about things that I didn't even know about, and I'm in the band with him, and I didn't even know about these things. So he's getting great content out of these guys, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Max was on Survivor. Max has done many years of podcasting. He knows how to do the job, and he's going to be terrific, but I think it's going to allow us to maybe go into some other content areas and keep the podcast popping and interesting and fun. And that's what it's all about. That is what it's all about, folks. So this is a quick rant because the point of this rant is just that. Welcome, Max. Let's hear your first interview. Let's get into it. Thank you all for listening. We're mass communicating.
We're mass communicating.
We're mass communicating.
Welcome back, folks, to Touchdowns All Day with John Barber. And let me tell you the very exciting news of this podcast that I have mentioned in the earlier segment is that we are bringing on Mr. Max Dawson as co-host of the show. Applause noise. And essentially, we're going to start going through what's coming up with the biscuit world, and Max is going to basically make this flow. You know, he's going to get us to a point of focus that people have mentioned offhand to me that potentially a little focus would be good to this podcast. So welcome, Max. Welcome to Touchdowns All Day. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Honored to be joining the team.
Yes, it's great. It's great. Very excited.
John, we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up in the next few weeks and months for the Disco Biscuits. What do you say we get right into the Disco Biscuits news section?
Let's go. Leap before you leap. leap before you jump, or what's the saying? Jump before you
jump. I don't even know. We don't follow any rules here on Touchdowns All Day or with the Disco Biscuits in general. Ladies and gentlemen, tickets for the New Year's run are still available at discobiscuits.com. 1228 at the Palladium, Times Square in New York City. That's a late night show. John, first time back in the city proper, not the Cap Theater or upstate New York, in quite a while. First time playing in Times Square since you wrote a song called Times Square.
That's pretty wild, right? We're playing in the same venue that the song Times Square and the in the, you know, space opera movie. That's, you know, would be a set. That's the spot where it goes down. So we're going to be on that very stage
It's pretty exciting. I love that room. That room sounds great. We play incredibly well in that room. There are some of the classic Disco Biscuit shows of all time. Some of the best Disco Biscuit improv consistency over the years has occurred in that room. I feel like that room just rings in D. And if you were to play song jams in D, it helps you. You know, there's something about that room that it helps the warmth and the strength of the jam. So it's gonna be a crusher. It's gonna be a banger, and we're very excited.
Okay, so from a very special New York City venue on the 28th to a real dump on the 30th and 31st, the Franklin Music Hall, and I say that with the utmost affection, the former Electric Factory, the site of so many legendary Biscuits moments, basically the home court of all home courts. How's it feel right. Going back home to the source, the origin, the spot where it all began?
Oh, geez, I don't know. So many things have happened at the Electric Factory. I fell through a ceiling at the Electric Factory. There's a lot of things that have happened at that venue. That is a notable one. Gangster was written live on stage at the Electric Factory. So me and Mark and... I believe Aaron, I think the whole band was in on it at that point. I don't know if Alan did it or not, but like we smashed a copier Office Space style at the Electric Factory. We flew Little Man in his Superman jumpsuit across the room at the Electric Factory.
The site of so many legendary New Year's pranks. Can't wait to see what you guys have in store for us this year. And for those of you who can't make it to Philadelphia, live streams available at nugs.net. Free for all subscribers, including all three sets of New Year's Eve. So no excuse for missing out on the shows. And side note, guys, Nugs is having its annual promo, $99 a year for a full year subscription. That gets you basically every note the Biscuits play, lots of live streams. The couch touring is amazing over there. Check out nugs.net for all the info.
People need to go to these shows. People need to attend these shows in person.
Yes.
These particular New Year's shows, we have our new lighting guy, Herm.
Ooh.
We're giving Herm a budget to do some cool, cool, cool stuff. I've been on the emails reading all the things that he's planning to do. And it's crazy the stuff that he's, like his depth of knowledge about different things that are cool and are, you know, going to work really well with our new music and how to frame the band and different kinds of smoke machines and all this different stuff. I'm very excited. I think if you want to go to the show, you're going to be very happy with the blow up of the lighting.
So that was one of the items on the agenda to discuss, the announcement that the Disco Biscuits do have a new lighting designer. John, talk a little bit about the search process and how you guys landed on Herm.
Well, we did do a number of shows with different lighting guys, and they were all really good, honestly. And they were all very, very different from one another, which I was surprised from. Just because the Biscuits do so much improv, and because jamming when the stage is red versus jamming when the stage is blue versus jamming when the stage is in a strobe light, are all very different experiences for the musicians on stage. And so it felt very much like Herm was kind of guiding the music in a way that made us jam really well and felt really comfortable and good. That's very important for us. I don't know if all bands have that kind of criteria for the lighting guy, but Herm is he's a jam band person. He does tons of different shows, so he does all sorts of different things, but he does have a lot of experience. I mean, Twiddle was legitimately jamming all the time, and so he's got a lot of hours of experience in that world, and so he made us feel very comfortable on stage. I walked off the Cap show stage thinking to myself, wow, we played great. The lights really were in sync. It felt very much like, you know, we're at full lighting plus music experience already. And then I went and watched the videos to see what the audience is seeing. And I saw the, you know, the lights on the walls, on the band, the gooiness of it, I think is maybe the term to describe it. And it just seemed like that was very much a great fit for us. I really like the other lighting guys we did too. I had a great time hanging out with them. I thought they were all very smart, very, you know, in tune with trying to do the best job possible. And so I think there's just a lot of talent out there in the lighting world. And we're very lucky that we had such a good chemistry with Herm. I hope for the best for this situation. And, you know, that's I feel like we, if this works out, you know, and it feels like it could go to new heights of greatness, I feel like that's a really lucky thing, because a lighting guy is such a unique art. It's a such a unique type of art. It's a, such a unique artist to do it. And, you know, and we're a very unique band. So it's
to say the least.
It's got to, yeah, it's got to mesh like four different ways. It's not an easy thing to do.
Well, welcome to the band, Herm. I know that people who are familiar with Herm's work are ecstatic. There was just a huge wave of support for him during the tryout period. And when the announcement came down, people were ecstatic. So very much looking forward to seeing his work in person, or if you can't make it to Philadelphia, and we stress, you got to be in Philadelphia for this New Year's Eve. But if you can't, watch it on Nugs. You guys are going to take a few weeks off, and then you're embarking on a very ambitious tour. 34 shows already announced. The Why We Dance tour kicks off.
Why We Dance.
West Coast, two nights at the Crystal Bay Casino, Crystal Bay, Nevada, January 25th and 26th. And then the tour takes you back down the West Coast. What an abundance of riches we on the West Coast are experiencing right now. After decades of not seeing you, we get you back a few months later. Fillmore, San Francisco, January 27th. The Catalyst, your return to Santa Cruz on the next night, the 28th. Fonda Theater in LA, thank you. God, that we're not going back to the Roxy. The Observatory in San Diego. Then you're going to swing east via Tucson, February 3rd, before returning to the Belly Up in Aspen for three nights. Right after that, we head to Boulder for three sold-out nights, February 9th and 10th at the Boulder Theater. And then a special Tractor Beam performance on Super Bowl Sunday, February 11th at the Fox. Very exciting. For those of you who missed out, apologies, but those are shaping up to be a legendary weekend. John, what do we have in store for the Tractor Beam show? Is that what style of Tractor Beam should we look forward to?
That is the big question. I think, you know, Tractor Beam is this concept that I really, really was. So I had a little, I don't want to go too digression here, but when we really refocused and put the band back together in 2019, one of my real bullet points was Tractor Beam kind of could be the future. I really feel like the Biscuits, when they are fully electronic, are doing some of the most interesting stuff that I hear the Biscuits do. Where, like, we can do your, you know, chord progression jam, guitar solo thing, and we do that pretty well. Like, but when we are doing fully electronic, like Mark's on a synth bass and Alan's on the electronic drums and Aaron is, you know, playing very synthy keys, and potentially I'm on some of my new synth patches for the guitar, those have been jams that are all being pointed out by the fan base regularly as, oh, that jam was sick. Oh, that jam was sick. And I think that that is just a indicate, that's just like tells me that the original idea that Tractor Beam is a big thing, that maybe the Biscuits are only the only band in the world that could do it. Like, really, who else could do that? Who else could go on stage and improv modern sounding techno without having to, you know, spin records? You know, without a DJ. Who can do that? No one. So basically the Biscuits, I think, are going to be, I mean, you know, maybe Rufus Day Soul could do it, but they won't. You know what I mean? They have their pop band ethos. They're playing over tracks and doing it the way they do it. Where the Biscuits, we're going to come into these songs and play literal improv techno. So that's what Tractor Beam will be at the Fox. It's going to be very improv technical. I'm trying to remove every single microphone from stage because for me, that's That's the big indicator, is the, no microphones on stage. Because what is a mic doing on stage? The mic is picking up an instrument that is a live instrument. And they don't use live instruments in dance, techno music at all. They use samples of live instruments, but they never use live instruments. So I think that we're going to try and get to that point with Tractor Beam. And I'm really trying to sell it hard to the band, as hard as I can. And I need them to buy in. And I think I got them to. I'm not sure. You never really know. Because like musicians have to be comfortable on stage. They have to be able to do things that make them comfortable, because if they're uncomfortable, they're not going to play to their best. They're going to be in their head or whatever. Then the question is, what's the set list? And it's not going to be the Tractor Beam from 2 years ago, which is us playing note for note DJ mixes that include multiple songs and stuff like that.
Okay.
I do want to continue to do that, but I feel like what the people have said, the crowd, the fans have spoken, is that they would like us to do Tractor Beam, kind of the version before that, which was techno versions of Disco Biscuit songs. And we were playing them without vocal samples and without using true techno instruments. We're using our acoustic jam band instruments. And so that's the part we're going to change. We're going to keep playing the Biscuit songs, but use these kind of modern techno instruments that we are maybe the only band in the world that can do that. And it's going to be very improv-y, and we might throw a DJ mix in there too, just to, you know, because I thought that was a cool thing. But that was for one segment in a Biscuit show. This is an entire Tractor Beam show, and I don't think we could do DJ segment over and over and over again, even though we did do that in Frisco. So, but we're not going to do that. We're going to do Disco Biscuit songs and maybe some cool covers and stuff, and just kind of focus on staying trancey, you know, staying techno. And I think this, you know, I part of what I do is work with the guys in the crew, like Rich Hartnarf at the mains, and try and figure out how to make the best sounding version of the Disco Biscuits possible. And Tractor Beam in the back of my mind is like, hey, if we can take all the microphones off stage, then we don't have feedback issues. We don't have reverberation issues, bleed issues. And I think in today's sound systems, if you get rid of those issues, you can hit the speakers a little bit harder. You can hit them a little bit more processed, and I just think those things all end up sounding great to people's ears. So that's what we're hoping for.
If you're looking for confirmation that the fans agree, just wait till later in this very episode when we get into the show song and jam of the year. You'll hear a lot of positive feedback for, I guess, the Tractor Beam-like segments that have been popping up in most of the shows this past fall. So, guys, if you have been waiting for the return of Tractor Beam, but also for the incorporation of some of the new elements, sounds like February 11th is the show for you. You're going to take a few weeks off after that Boulder run, and then you're going to set out for the East Coast leg starting on March 7th, two nights at the Fillmore, in Silver Springs, Maryland. Guys, you know where to head, discobiscuits.com/shows for more info. And while you're there, make sure to check out the VIP packages. It's a pretty good deal. You get early entry to the venue and access to the merch. You get to be in the room for the pre-show soundcheck and group photo with the band, limited edition show poster, commemorative laminate and lanyard. It is a great deal, and a lot of people have been having a lot of fun with that. So check out the VIP packages. Like I said, discobiscuits.com/shows.
With this first 50th episode, we're going to let Mark talk about these. Mark's going to speak very specifically to, you know, the VIP sound checks. He's going to talk about the jam of the year. And this is a really great interview. It's a very candid interview. We really caught Mark on a great day, which is just like, you know, honestly, Mark is, he loves to talk on the microphone in the podcast situation. He's got a great knowledge of everything Disco Biscuits, and that is really on display in this interview. I learned a lot from this interview, and I really feel like anyone who's a Disco Biscuit fan who's wondering like how we decide what to play and what happens backstage with the band to get ready for a show, he really goes into it in a huge amount of detail and a lot of color. So this is our Mark Brownstein interview. We've done Mark before on the podcast. It's literally our best performing podcast ever, besides yours, of course, Max. And you know, we're really happy that he made the time to be on with us again. This is a Max interview, and I think that's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting for me. We were doing a bunch of studio stuff. We have 3 new songs that we made, and while we're making the new song, Max was also updating us on the new podcast interview process and how everything is going. So very excited stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, please take some time to listen to the wonderful and eloquent bass player of the year, Mr. Mark Brownstein.
...2023 was a year of milestones for the Disco Biscuits. It brought us many firsts. New material and arrangements. New venues. New gear. New cities. New faces. Even entirely new countries. But it was also a year of returns that saw the band head back to cities and regions they hadn't visited in ages. It was a time for dusting off and breathing fresh life into classic material that had been out of rotation for years. Most of all, 2023 saw the Disco Biscuits experience a return to form, truly making good on the promise that set break is over. With the New Year's run fast approaching, we here at Touchdowns All Day invite you to take this opportunity to look back with us and to celebrate the many highlights and unforgettable moments of the last 12 months. To help us do this, I'm joined by some extraordinarily qualified guests, people who I trust have listened with a critical ear to just about every note the band played this year. First up, from the Biscuits Internet Project, Andy Bazzani.
Thank you, Max.
Also joining us, fresh off the road from Miami and on the verge of heading out on his own solo DJing tour, the man himself, the one and only Mark Brownstein.
How's it going, Max?
So, gentlemen, before we dig in, a little tale of the tape, courtesy of our friend Mike Walsh, also at the Biscuits Internet Project. The Disco Biscuits have played 69 shows this year. It'll be 72 by year's end. 141 distinct songs played. 3 debut Biscuits originals. We had Falling in May, By the Time in June, Photograph also in June. 1 new cover, Right Round, back in March on my birthday. 27 songs brought back after a hiatus of more than a year. We had First Inversions for Home Again, Plan of Attack, Strobe Lights, Kitchen Mitts, To Be Continued, One Chance. And we even had a bust out of over 1,000 shows. The last inverted cameo Lee Sands was apparently April 15th, 2002. Mark,
wow.
How does it feel hearing these stats? Did 2023 feel as significant to you and the rest of the guys in the band as it did to me and Andy and everybody else in the audience?
I mean, you know, 72 shows is a lot of shows for us to be playing in a year at this point. There's been months, you know, a month and a half where we'll reel off 20 something shows. And that's as many as we had done in a year for 10 years. And, you know, that's the answer to the whole thing is that's why all the other numbers are a testament to that one number, you know, that we're doing 72 shows, you know, gives us the chance to do 100. How many did you say? 171 songs?
141 distinct songs played.
141. Yeah, we could get that up to 200. But I mean, I was looking at the list earlier today of songs that are unlikely to ever get played again, just like stuff that's fallen by the wayside. You know, you're like 2 cigarettes or like I have a comprehensive list when they give us like the song list that we're picking for tour, like what the songs are going to be, you know, that's like 150 songs. Right. But the comprehensive list, you know, goes well over 200. I don't even know, but it's like, there was like at least 60 songs in the category of Mariel Bop Bop and Two Cigarettes and, you know, Strawberry Girl. And it's a long list of stuff that we've just like written, tried out, you know, for one reason or another, you know, camera B, it didn't stick in the canon of songs for the long term. But yeah, I mean, 141 songs, that's a lot of songs. And how many covers did we play this year? I know you said we have one new cover. I'm surprised we only put three new songs in this year. That's the number that really stands out to me, because we've, you know, I guess this year just went by so fast, because we had put in like in the last active, like 12 months, like the 12 months before that, there was like, you know, 20 new songs put in. And then, you know, it was COVID for basically 2 years before that. But right before that, in 2019, we had put in like 20 something songs, some of which we have like kind of survived into this new era, and some of which we need to like rework and have on our list of things to do, like Freebus Slinky. Like, we want to work that and put some lyrics to it. And, you know, like maybe sit in the studio with Joey for like 3 or 4 days and just like let Freebus Slinky play and finish it. Because there's a bunch of songs like that from the 19 batch. Like, we got Running finished, Clocks is finished, you know, but a lot of those songs, Electric Slinky, Freebus Slinky, you know, even maybe Anthem, which we could be considered finished, but could also be like the jam of a Above the Waves style song, where there's like a song portion on it and Anthem is where we drop in, and then the peak of Anthem is the melody, and then we come back around and finish the song, like Munchkin's Invasion or Above the Waves or Reactor or any of those songs. You know, I don't know if we'll do that. I mean, it may take somebody else other than John even writing the song and trying to put it together, because John's moved on, right? Yeah. So like, there's like, we were in the studio working on a new song today, and it's like awesome, but we weren't in the studio working on Freebus Slinky, and we were in the studio, right? So it's like, it's our choice, like, what are we gonna do? And it always seems to be that we're moving forward. And that's like, really, in the end, that's the direction you want to be moving in. Like, meaning, I was looking at this list of like 40 to 50 songs that don't get played ever. And an argument can be made to like, oh, let's like bring back this thing that only got played two or three times and nobody fucking knows what it is, because we think it would be cool to have this bust out. But it's maybe to the fans, it wouldn't come across as like as big of a deal, or like, you know, people wouldn't even, in a lot of cases, we were talking about playing News from Nowhere. Like, I asked them if we could play it.
Why not?
Yeah, and we could play it. Why not? The answer would be because ultimately you're like the only person out there who knows what News from Nowhere is.
I would be happy to hear it. Just throwing that out there. I know a few other people who would.
I appreciate that. And I'm sure now that this is aired, I'm going to get blown up from people saying we should play News from Nowhere. Some people are going to say you should play the techno version of it like you did at Camp Bisco. No, it's the original. So I came into a quick digression. This is like a 2023 thing, though. This is a kind of thing that happens in 23. I came in backstage. I said to the band, hey, I'd like to play News from Nowhere. I don't have any kind of desire to play it publicly on stage right now, but I'd like to play it. Like, I would like to listen to it myself. The best version for me would be us doing it live in a room together and like having it sound live and like, you know, clean and fresh and new. And I'm not like, you know, the versions of News from Nowhere that are available are from like 22 years ago, and they're not like great clean versions of soundboards or anything. We couldn't even sing really then when we were playing News from Nowhere. Like, now it would be great now, you know?
Yeah.
So we played it. Alan wasn't there. The three of us like played through it once or twice. Alan walked in. I was like, hey, don't freak out. Just don't worry. Like, there's nothing that's happening that you need to know. Just sit down and here, you know,
does Alan have that speed? Just, I feel like that's,
yeah. Well, that's the thing about Alan is he would surprise everybody. Magner played with Alan over the summer after Fish in Chicago, I think it was, with like Alana from Soundtrap Sector 9 and Brendan Bayless from Humphreys McGee. And when he got back, he was raving about Alan and his like slow speed grooves, which, you know, we don't get to hear a ton of at the Biscuits. Maybe sometimes backstage or maybe during soundcheck, we'll play some blues stuff, just like you get on stage, you end up playing some blues stuff, or like, you know, so everyone's always playing blues during soundcheck. And then we fall into like blues riffs, and you could hear that he's got a good shuffle. He's got a great swing. Like, he doesn't play it often, I think probably because Alan's the kind of guy that like you have to like specifically say do this. If you ever said don't do it once, he'll they say he's a robot, but like he'll program. It's like he gets programmed to like, was told not to do that once, so I'm never gonna ever do it again. So you have to like correct that and be like, hey, Alan, can you put like a swing on this, and then it'll just all of a sudden be the fucking deepest, sickest swing of all time. And he could do like a Purdy shuffle, or he could do like a Clyde Stubblefield, like James Brown beat. He could do like a Zigaboo Modales meters style New Orleans beat, you know. So he's extremely versatile, and he could play blues, he could play jazz. You know, he plays everything, but you know, it's like he's like a solid, crazy drummer. But you know, Magner was raving, and I've had like, I get glimpses of it where I'm like, man, wow, we just like maybe like in a Memphis jam or like a Little Eye jam, and he'll like fall into like this like swing on the hi-hat where it's like, man, this is the deepest, craziest swing out there, you know. And I've come to feel like Alan really is one of the best drummers out there. Like, he's just like, you know, from a technical perspective, it's like remarkable how solid and like, you know, strong. You know, when you talk about stamina, you have to like take that into account.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you're judging somebody's like drumming, at some point they're going to like lose stamina. Like, you know, Alan's going for 2 hours straight at 135 beats per minute with like small breaks in between, maybe, and like no stops. You know, it's like, it's really quite remarkable. So,
oh, yeah.
I digress. We were playing News for Nowhere backstage, and he does have that slow beat to answer your question, and we played it, we sang it, I pulled up the lyrics, like we were able to find the lyrics to it. I pulled the lyrics up, we like printed it and passed it around, and we played the song once or twice, to maybe backstage as a band with the three of us once, and then with the whole band second time. And you know, like, that was enough for me because I got my News from Nowhere, I know that you didn't get yours yet.
What about for the rest of us? Are you telling us that there's a chance?
I just like maybe during a VIP one day. I know Terrence says don't do bust outs during VIP. He says it's like really not looked upon kindly. It's like you're selling access to something that the normal fan is like paying already a lot of money and coming to the show without the upgrade to VIP, and you don't want to like make it a situation where you're like selling bust outs. And I've heard that other bands have made that mistake at times, but like we did it with AWOLs. Where did we play AWOLs at during Austin? We did the VIP, I think. And then we ended up playing it somewhere else later in the week or in the, like Chicago, maybe up in the Midwest. The following week, we played it at the actual show, I think.
Encore at the Riv Theater in September 21st.
Right. So I had, after the Austin VIP, I had to like immediately reach out to Terrence and be like, hey, dude, I know you said don't do this. We did it, but like, don't worry. It's like, it was like a practice. Like, but you didn't even plan it. Like, we just got on stage and Barbara started playing the lick and I was like, all right, here we go. We're doing it. Like, there's no, we can't even talk about whether it's the right thing to do or not. Like, we mentioned it in the microphone to the VIP fans. We were like, I know we're not supposed to do that, but we did it anyway. Yeah, man, like AWOLs, like you're talking about statistics. You're talking about songs that haven't been played in a long time. You know, you're talking about new ways of playing things. You're talking about like the mix of the new songs with the old songs and kind of seamlessly working them together into one tapestry of music over the course of, you know, not only one set, but, and not only one show, but over the course of a whole weekend where it becomes like, to me, like five nights is the show, right? Yeah. Like that's the way I think of the show. I think like if we're like if we're having a great week and one of the shows isn't like the, like, at that, like the craziest level, it's like the whole week. It's like I'm thinking about Saturday night as like the peak of a whole, you know, body of music, right? And a lot of people are coming to all five. You know, we did five in the Northeast, Higher Ground, and then the Infinity, and then, well, we didn't do the Portland show, we're making that up, but then going down to the Capitol Theater shows, there's a lot of people that did all of those shows, and you're sort of, you know, you're playing 50 something songs over four nights, no repeats, and that's the show, right? So when you're talking about what's the best show of the year, like have we started to ask what's the best week of the year? Is that one of the questions?
We did not ask that, but I've seen people ask it recently. I don't recall if it was Facebook or Fantasy Tour. What's the best run? Because it does make sense. You know, you get these 3 to 5 show runs where if you look at the set lists, not just individually, but as part of a greater whole, you can see an arc. And I know that, you know, you sit down to write the set lists before the run, right? You kind of divide things up across the shows. You don't just write one set list and then the next day write the next one. You're thinking of it like, how am I going to approach a tour?
We start with where we're ending. Like, you know, like maybe not the last show of the run, but like if it's like a Thursday to Sunday or something, you know, we'll start at Saturday. Like, what's going to happen Saturday night? Saturday is the biggest show of the week. Not like musically per se. You can't choose what's the biggest. You could choose what's the biggest set list of the week, but you know, that's the, like, on paper doesn't necessarily translate to what was the best show. Right. So, but you start kind of looking at that, like what's the tier A songs that are getting played this week and where are they going? What are the set closers? I've said this before on podcasts, but like Al from Mo once sat me down and he's like, this is how I do it. I put the whole thing, like all the shows of the week, on a piece of paper, like, you know, and then I like draw out the set list for each show. And then I start with openers, closers, and like encores, right? And then if you do that, like the rest of it falls into place, right?
Yeah.
So after that, I moved to that. I totally changed the way I did it. I used to like start at the beginning of the show and write the show out, but like I moved to his system of like starting with set closers, you know, and set openers, and
yeah,
everything goes around that. I mean, how can you not consider 3/11/23 one of the best shows of the year? You'd have to, right? The Caverns movie night show. So I'm sure that'll come up.
There's a lot of competition, yes. and it will come up. So before we get to that, Mark, we're going to get to the fan poll. We'll talk about how the nominees.
I'm excited about the fan poll. I'm browsing through the year right now. It's a lot of shows to browse through. You said we're at 69 right now.
69. You're going to end at 72. Looking back at the set lists, looking back at the itinerary, there were so many special moments this last year. It was a year of, the Wheel Set, Horns, Movie Night, Aspen, Iceland, Pine Creek, the entire West Coast tour, Austin, Biscoland,
right.
Cap Theater. So many special nights.
Milwaukee. Don't forget Milwaukee.
You've
glossed right over it. You went from Austin to Biscoland. You can't do that.
I mean, Indianapolis. But Mark, if you had
St. Louis
to distill 2023 down to not just musical moments, not just what you thought was the best show or the jam, but some of the memories that you're going to take forward with you for the rest of your life, what would characterize 2023 for you?
Well, a lot of what we do is characterized by where we go. Right. And this was a year that we went everywhere. Like that's the thing that a lot of the years from 2011 to 2018 and then maybe a little bit 2019, but we started to branch out. All of a sudden we were playing in Miami, we were at Fort Lauderdale. We were playing in multiple nights in Syracuse, multiple nights. We did a little tour at the end of 2019, set break was when set break was over. Right. So to speak. And, but before that it was a lot of, Colorado, Philadelphia, New York, we had our Camp Bisco, we had the runs that we would do every year, holidays. And it was basically the same thing every year, with just barely tweaked, right? For 8 years. And then, obviously everybody knows the story. We set break was over, the gas tank was filled, and we were ready to go when COVID hit, right? So what's happening right now, 2023, that was what was supposed to happen in 2020.
Yeah.
We took our fucking 8 years off. 2023 wasn't supposed to be our big year back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're supposed to be well into 3 years of huge playing and album releasing and this is 3 years after when we had planned to do what we did, which was play 70 something shows, go everywhere. Like it was booked. Like we announced, it was all tickets were sold. Minneapolis. We had a whole tour that got canceled on March 12th of 2020 when we canceled the first Fillmore show. It was a whole tour all over the country, right? And so, and we had our California shows on the books. We had our Oregon shows. We had everything on the books ready to go. So this year was. It'll be remembered basically forever. The 2022 I'll remember as the year that we wrote the space opera and basically pretty much all of the songs were debuted in 2022 because maybe late 2021 even we started, but 2022 To Be Continued was debuted in Atlanta at the Eastern, and that was November of 2022, right? So by then we had gotten through all of the songs. Why We Dance, we did that one in 2022 also.
Everything was from June onward.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, June, and then the last
Freeze was first.
Spaga's Last Stand.
And Spaga's Last Stand, which, over the New Year's run.
And where over New Year's run. Okay, exactly right.
Yeah.
So, 2022, that's what it was. It was the space opera. Obviously, it's coming out in 2024, but but it was all debuted and worked through and like jams built and like songs turned into monsters. And like, you know, September 2022 in Harrisburg, when we played another Plan of Attack into Inverted, Twisted in the Road, and like blew up that Twisted in the Road, and then came back around and made the end of Another Plan of Attack into like a big jam that like is like lives on its own. It's like those nights from June till the end of 2022 had so many moments like that Harrisburg moment where it's like, holy shit, Twisted in the Road is a fucking monster. Another Plan of Attack is a monster. Like, these songs are all so good, you know. Maybe a One Chance to Save the World took it maybe until this year when we hit. It was really in the cave at the caverns where that song came alive when we added the end part on and we had finally like reworked it. I think of One Chance to Save the World as a 2023 song because it wasn't like anywhere. It wasn't close to done when we were playing it at first. It was just like a ditty, right? It was like, it ended up so far from where we started, and it should almost have a different name. But that period, you know, you'll always remember the second half of 2022 is just like this creative burst where it was like, and John always said, he said the whole time from 2010 to 2019 that he would like be happy to go on tour if we had like 20 new songs, right? And like he wrote like 20 new songs before we had that tour in 2020. Who knows? That's the funny part. Like, who knows what Clocks would be right now or what Freeman Slinky would be, or like we would have had the chance to go out and play those songs the way we played space opera songs in 2022 and 2023, like where we went all over and just played them every night, made sure that we were playing three or four of the space opera songs, because you know how it is. Like, back in the day, the songs that we wrote then also were okay when we debuted them. And then the fans, there weren't so many of you guys that it was hard to like develop them live. Like, Bassist didn't even have a jam, like a peak at the end of it when we started playing it. And like that, like peak that came out of Bassist, like for like $4.99, like a track where it's like all of a sudden the biggest like peak with a melody and the changes at the end, that developed over like 98 and 99 by playing a lot of shows and just playing the song a lot. And we're like, we should probably put a peak on this. Like, what kind of changes would be cool? All right, here, I'll write a melody at the end. That all happened. So like we needed to just have the resolve to be like, okay, these 30 songs, we're just going to play them no matter what people say to us. We're going to ignore the fans and make them great. Because there was a long period where it was hard. Like, we were in the 2007, 8, 9, like that period of those songs that I was talking about that are now basically defunct.
Yeah.
That we put so many of them in. It was like, actually, you look back and it's like 2007 to 2010 was like a creative like burst of like a flurry of like creativity by John, like probably equal to his output in terms of just pure like quantity, as what happened in 98 and 99 and in 2022 and 2023, you know, like where it's just like, this is crazy amount of new music coming from this genius. So, but 2023 was our chance to do it. It was like our makeup tour. It was like, this was our chance to go and find out like what was going to happen if we went to Seattle, what was going to happen if we went to Pine Creek, or like this, like, we've never been to Montana. It's like, you know, it's like, who's coming to that show? Like, we're booking three nights or four nights in Montana. And like, we went and we found out, like, you know, we now know who our core fan base is because they were in fucking Montana with us. Like, we have a list of who our core kids are. And it was, you know, and obviously there were some Montana people there too, but like for the predominantly that was like, that's the group of people that were in Montana are the group of people that fueled all of 2023 for us. That was the group of people that were in Portland. That was the group of people that were in San Francisco. That was the group of people that were in the caverns.
And Iceland, you know, those people.
Definitely. I mean, Iceland was everybody. Like, you know, like Iceland was the, where I think maybe even some of our biggest shows of the whole year, if not our biggest, you know, outside of like Boston, which was really huge. I think that Iceland, like ironically, like, you know, like that's where we drew the most people of anywhere in the whole country of America. And, you know,
what I love though, is that, you know, when you look back on this year, you're going to have a lot of fond memories, not just the musical memories, but the experiences, the people, the crowds, the markets that you got to go back to that had hundreds, if not thousands of people who had been waiting to see a Disco Biscuits concert for, you know, upwards of a decade. When I think back on my memories of 2023, the big cheer at the end of the first set in Portland is probably the thing that is most indelible. The crowd not letting you leave the stage, an audience full of people who had just been waiting so long to see you. And then you guys came out already having played a lot of shows, being really tired, and still just absolutely delivered that first set. Huge local representation. You had Toby bringing his entire group of friends, renting out the balcony, like 50 people or something. And
that's right. He bought pretty much the whole balcony.
Yeah. And the set was over and you would have thought it was the last night of tour, the last set you had just encored. Like the standing ovation just went on and on and on. And looking around and seeing everyone in the crowd with the biggest smile on their faces and looking up on stage and seeing the four of you smiling, that really felt good from my standpoint.
Yeah. And like, I remember that first set and we like played down to the bottom in that first set, which was, you know, and I think it was an inverted down to the bottom too. And like coming into the peak of that was like, it was just like a special moment on the tour. Like here, like you've got to come to Oregon to see the inverted down to the bottom. That's how that felt. Like it felt like the people who made it to Portland and the people who have been waiting 20 years to see us,
yeah,
right out of the right out of the gates to be continued into it. Like, and it's like, okay, they were opening with a jam into a new song, right? You know, okay, people never heard To Be Continued live before, most of the people there probably, you know, the locals at the very least. And that's, you know, we've had managers over the years tell us like, don't open with new songs, like, you know, open with a hit, close with a hit, right? Like, and like, we don't fucking care like about that, but like we probably should, like, you know, we do. Like there was years where I was like really strict about it, but this last year I've been starting and ending shows with new songs because there's just too many new songs and we have to just get them in one way or another. And so like if it means opening the show with To Be Continued, great, we do it. And then but throwing the inverted down to the bottom there, like I knew that it was going to be a moment, you know, like that was going to be a special moment in the tour, you know, and the rest of the set was great too, you know, but Bend the night before had a huge crowd cheer. It was like, it was a fucking maniacs there after the Hot Air Balloon. We did like Hot Air Balloon and I-Man in a set together with that's opened and closed the set, Hot Air Balloon, I-Man, and the end with I-Man, Hot Air Balloon. And we're like hesitant sometimes to play Hot Air Balloon out. It's a very long song. It takes up a lot of time. You know, it's like, you know, it could be like 25, 30 minutes of the set if we're jamming out of it and then jamming back into it. And I just want to make sure that we're, you know, getting to all of the things that we want to do and like, you know, getting to the end of Hot Air Balloon and having enough time to finish it. Like at the end of the set where no matter where we started, I tend to put the end of it at the end of the set or the end of the show, right? It's just one of those things. The flight of the Hot Air Balloon at the end is just like that kind of thing where it's just like, you know, you know, and you're just done. Like, that also elicits a big cheer if we execute it really, really well. When we execute the end of Hot Air Balloon perfectly, big cheer. And there's other examples of it. Milwaukee, we did it. Hartford. Like, people talk about, like, Bend, Milwaukee, and Hartford as some of the best shows of the year. And one thing they all have in common is they all three of them had, like, sick hot air balloons, you know? And, like, I don't know. Like, I'd like to look at the shows and see what else they had in common. But, like, I do. That's what stands out to me in my memory of those three shows. I actually can't even remember what we played. I know the deal in Milwaukee. It was like Hot Air Balloon into the deal. And that was a really special moment for the year. And I remember Hot Air Balloon and I-Man in Portland, but, like, I don't even remember what else we played in Hartford. It's like 69 shows to try to remember what happened over the course of the year. But, and it's funny how I remember the stuff that's, like, old or even better.
Yeah.
But those three shows stand out for me, Bend, Milwaukee, and Hartford. And I think what stands out for me is, like, the energy that was in the crowd at the end of the show or at the end of the set when we finished our hot air balloon. Place exploded. In all three places, it exploded. But then the next night after Bend, like, I got to be honest, like, you know, like, I remember Dave Murphy from STS9. Once said, the original bass player of STS9 before Alana, he once said to me that he loved living in Boulder or Denver. I think he lived in Boulder. The whole band lived in Santa Cruz. He lived in Boulder. He said that he loved living in Boulder because he was really famous there. and it's like it feels really nice when the whole crowd cheers like that. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it happened at 4999. There was, like, that one time that it happened. I mean, it happens a lot, but, like, there's moments that I remember that stand out, that Portland is going to stand out. Like, when the crowd doesn't let you leave the stage because they just don't stop cheering. Like, there was one in Portland at the State Theater, I think in 2017 or 2018. I think also we played a hot air balloon set. And the place went absolutely apeshit at the end for, like, minutes. Our friend Wendy, who probably we'll get to know at some point on Touchdowns All Day, if I know, you know what I mean? Like, she, like, one of our best friends, she likes to record those moments for us so that after the show, we can go back and take them in again, because maybe it's a little overwhelming while it's happening in real time, or maybe you don't even recognize how big it actually was. But there was one at Toad's Place where, like, the lights came on and the place just wouldn't stop cheering back in the day. And there was 4999 where we got off stage and they didn't stop cheering. And the venue was like, you have to stop playing. Like, you're over curfew. And the crowd wouldn't stop cheering. The lights went on in the venue and the crowd was cheering even, like, louder and just, like, crazier. And eventually I turned to the guy. Somebody turned to the guy. I don't know if it was me or Lesser or John who said it, but somebody was like, we have to go back on. Like, there, it's going to be faster for you to just let us play a song than to let this continue to go on for the next 10 minutes. They're not stopping. It was like 5 minutes. It was the most absurd thing. So Portland, to tie it back to 23, was one of those moments. I agree with you. It was maybe the pinnacle moment of the whole year. Like, I have gone back, you know, kind of in reference to what I was saying about Dave Murphy loving living in Boulder because he's so famous there. I am not ashamed to tell you that I have watched the cheer from Portland like 5 to 10 times this year. Like, if I'm ever feeling down at all for any reason, I could, like, open that up and go watch it and just, like, feel on top of the world. It was insane, you know. It's like, I just, like, those are the moments where, you know, like, this obviously, for all the doubts I may have had at different times over the years, like, if you know the history of the Biscuits, obviously you know that we've all had doubts at times, like, you know,
1999, I definitely had a doubt. It led to me getting fired from the band. I like wasn't sure that this is what I wanted to be doing, and I was partying really hard, and I went like insanely crazy about it. Like, you know, like I'm done. Like, I can't do this. I don't want to do this with you guys. Like, whatever. And then like, I did want to do it. I just like had like a temporary lapse, you know, reason.
Yeah.
And rational thought, and ultimately that was, you know, enough of a reason to get fired, which I now as an adult understand, but at the time it seemed such like such a harsh punishment for like a temporary lapse of reason. But like looking back, I was like, man, it was impossible to live with. Like, I made it so hard on it. But yeah, you know, like you have all these thoughts over the course of your life about, you know, the COVID hit and we couldn't work for 2 years, like not the way we wanted to work. And it's like, man, this is a hard business to be in. Like, I never even thought that something like this could happen. Like,
yeah.
This is why we're not getting to work. But, you know, Portland, that was one of those moments where I'm like, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be in the world right now. I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, if you're making people that happy, excited, and jubilant, like, that's enough. Like, if that's, like, enough. Like,
you're doing something right.
We're doing what we need to do. It's maybe not, like, Portland every night. You can't have a Portland every night. But, like, we kind of did have a Portland every night. Like, we were, like
yeah, was that was 2023, a Portland every night.
It was, like we went to California, which is traditionally kind of like a mellower crowd. And it was not
this time.
No,
definitely not.
It was not mellow at all. It was fucking ham.
Sweat dripping crazy from the walls.
Yeah, it was amazing. And like the Fillmore was like probably our biggest Fillmore show that we've ever done. You know what I mean? We've played the Fillmore a lot of times, but I don't think we ever did that many people. And that's after a 13-year break. And it was definitely the most engaged, like excited Fillmore crowd we ever had. The Fillmore is a tough room. I've always felt like, man, it's hard to get the energy going in that room. It's hard to get the crowd connected in that room. But it didn't feel hard in 2023. It felt easy. And then yeah, the Roxy in San Diego after that, like coming down the coast from Seattle, every show was packed all the way from Seattle to San Diego. And like, you know, obviously it ended up like oversold out with like just like a wildly packed amount of people in the last two shows, and like people like paying hundreds of dollars for tickets, and like there was all kinds of finagling to try to get in and like sneaking in, and all kinds of shit was happening in those shows. It felt like the Sunset Strip in 2003 or something.
It felt like the old days of trying to sneak Mitesh in like in a road case. So,
great.
You know, we have touched on a lot of topics that set up some of the questions that we asked the fans. We ran a poll for the song of the year, the show of the year, and the jam of the year. We had over 800 people who submitted votes in a matter of a few days. The one thing, though, that stood out to me, and I think to Andy as well, who thank you, Andy, helped us tabulate these results, was that while we tried to narrow the field, we encouraged people to write in their favorites if we missed them. And there were probably, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of write-in votes. There are so many different shows and moments that people wanted us to commemorate. We could probably do, you know, 10 hours on this. So let's not do 10 hours though. Let's try to get things back on track and kick things off with the song of the year category. So we were talking earlier about the impact that Hot Air Balloon had when it was played. You know, that didn't even make our list because we had so many songs this year that every time they appeared in the set list, it seemed like that was it. That was the show that was going to deliver. If you got the show with fill in the blank song in it, you knew you were at the show. The cool thing is the nominees for Song of the Year included everything from brand new songs, 2023 vintage, to songs from 97, 98, some of the original material.
Yeah, so, I don't remember what you put on the list. So I just like I want to, without reading what it is or hearing what the songs of the year are, I just want to talk about what I think the songs of the year are for a second.
Perfect.
And why. I'm just going to say my songs of the year without getting a multiple choice on it.
Okay.
My songs of the year are. All right. You have to. Hot Air Balloon has to be included in it because of the, what I was just talking about, how Hot Air Balloon popped up in three of the most like epic, like raging shows of the year, Bend, Milwaukee and Hartford. Probably neither of those shows will end up winning show of the year, but they like that's how 23 was. There were so many good shows. I think that it really started being great because there was a lot of shtick up front, right? We did The Wheel, and The Wheel always is like The Wheel, and we did like, you know, the movie, and we did, what was the other shtick that we did at the beginning of the year? Yeah, we did Horns, and Horns ends up being like Horns. It's like not, I don't think that we could put Horns in and have it be the show of the year because there's like a 20-minute period where we're concentrating on being something that we're not at when we're at our best, right? Yeah. So that's why I think that that was like that. But like we wanted to make Every Night different at the beginning of 23 just to like set the tone for the year. Barbara specifically was like, let's do all the things that we have done over the years, like all the fun different things, like Spin the Wheel, like, you know, Fan Set List, like all the thing which we're still building up to.
Yeah,
but you know, Spin the Wheel and the Horn shows and like the movie show, let's get it all in there. And I think that House of Blues and Town Ballroom at the beginning of the year were good. So Town Ballroom had Home Again in it. And I would have to say Home Again's one of the songs of the year. So for me, Hot Air Balloon, Home Again. We determined that we played Home Again 11 times this year. And I think all 11 of them were done with the drum and bass beat that we used to do back in the very, very early days of Home Again. I wrote it as just for anybody that doesn't know this. I was out of the band in between January 3rd of 2000 and July 12th of 2000. And I wanted to write a whole bunch of songs so I could start my own band, which I did. I was called the Maui Project, and it was all these songs about Hawaii. That was inspired by a trip I took to Hawaii in that August of 1999. And I wrote all these songs, and Home Again was one of them. And it was supposed to be like my version of Svengali. And it was written over a drum and bass beat. It was two chords. It was simple. It had one chorus in it. No like verses. It was just, here's the part. Here's the chorus. Here's the jam. Come back to the chorus. Svengali, same thing. Here's the intro. Here's the chorus. Here's the jam. Here's the chorus. And we're done. Right. So both songs have the same structure. They're both written over two chords. They both have a chorus only, and they were both originally written over this drum and bass beat. You know, I basically ripped off Svengali right home again, you know, is what it was. But it was different enough. It had its own thing going on. I don't know if anybody ever noticed that it was like my Svengali, but it was, you know, I have a lot of songs like Plan B was my Magellan. Like Barbara wrote Magellan, and I wanted to write a song over that same beat. So I wrote Plan B, and I wrote Chemical Warfare Brigade over like the 6/8 beat. So a lot of times Barbara writes something, and then I write something that's it inspires me to write something similar to it and do it my own way.
And so often those songs pair together so nicely. There were so many great Plan B Magellans back in the day. And now it makes sense that those songs were kind of in dialogue with one another.
That's right. And I also write songs in pairs like Trooper and Bernstein and Chasnoff, or like Feeling Twisted and We Like to Party. Like those are like sister songs, like Plan B and Chemical Warfare Brigade. And it's like, you know, if you look down my list of songs, pretty much every song that I write has like another song that's related to it somehow. Like, obviously everybody knows, Grass is Green and Huma Huma Nuka Nuka are like, you know, have similar structure of jam and so on and so on. I have so many songs that have like a sister song or a brother song. So Home Again, Hot Air Balloon. Voice is Insane has to be included for the Song of the Year, just based off of the Pine Creek voices and the Solana Beach voices, which I think I liked even better than the Pine Creek voices. The Solana Beach voices was to my personal taste. Not denying that Pine Creek was great, but for me, it took a little while to get to where it was like truly listenable for me. It took a little while to get there. Whereas it's a long 32 minutes, you know, but like the Pine Creek, the Solana is a little shorter, but it's like, it's really beautiful. So Hot Air Balloon, Home Again, Voices, The Deal has to be in the mix. Like The Deal, just like, you know, it's one of the reasons when you talk about, you know, that if you get a certain song that you're getting the great show, The Deal has to be in that list of songs where it's like, if you're getting The Deal in this show, you know, that's going to be a great show. I'm interested to know what, for you, what are the other songs from 2023 that fall into that category? Those are my four. My four songs of the year: The Deal, Hot Air Balloon, Home Again, and Voices Insane. You know, and there's so many others. One Chance to Save the World can be like an honorary mention. There's a lot of songs that I think were great this year, and that's why the shows were great. Who's in Charge is an honorary mention for me. First of all, two questions. I'm going to start asking the questions right here. Two questions. What are the songs that you feel like if you're getting it in a show, this is going to be a great show? And then my second question, to rein it back in, is what were the nominees for Song of the Year?
For me, this last year, everything felt like it was built around The Deal. When you were talking earlier about how you conceptualized runs in terms of not just one set list, but five set lists, wherever The Deal was, to me, by the end of the year, that's the show that I knew. If The Deal was still on the board on, you know, the third or fourth night of a 5-night run, I knew that we were closing in on the peak of the week. The other thing
it's
is
funny
that
you say that. I feel exactly the same way. Like, that's why when I mentioned The Deal, instantly said that, like, you know, you know, and Hot Air Balloon felt that way too. But like, then it, like, the pinnacle was Milwaukee, where there was Hot Air Balloon and The Deal paired together, where it was just.
And that's one of the things I was going to say, is that Hot Air Balloon was for you so important. For me, the songs that Hot Air Balloon went into were the ones. So Deal, obviously, and then I-Man. The Hot Air Balloon I-Man from Bend, to me, announced that I-Man was once again, I mean, listen, I-Man in terms of the repertoire has been probably one of the most, if not the most consistent tier one heavy hitter. But this year, I-Man once again became the song I felt like where when I-Man dropped in the Roxy, when I-Man dropped in Bend, when I-Man Austin, I-Man became the statement song, I felt like, again this year. And of course, Voices. That Pine Creek Voices, I think, was a really, like, a signal moment. That was, you know, you say that was a long 30 minutes. I like a long 30 minutes. I like
I like it too. And, you know, it's funny because, like, things like that don't just happen, right? Like, sometimes they do just happen. But like with Voices, if we don't talk about this, we'll end up being in the intro of Voices very quickly. Right. Yeah. So before we played that, I went back to the band and I said, you know, I remember in Mellstock in like 1998 or 1999, this like show out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for Jason Melham's farm. We had a Voices where like the beginning of the beginning of the song was super stretched out. And I think they all were back then. Like this particular one, we were kind of playing this chord progression that is like out of a Rush song. I don't even know what Rush song it is, but like I remember the chord progression, you know, we were playing like G to D to B to C. Right. And I remember like that sound of it is like, you would instantly probably be able to hear the Rush song with it being pointed out. But I mentioned, like, we did a whole like ambient jam over the rhythm of voices that probably, you know, in 98, 99 fashion was like 12 minutes long before we even played the song. Right. Yeah. And just thinking about that version and the other versions from 99, 2000 and the very early years, like made me think like we should stretch a voices out. Like we should let it go 10 minutes before we get to the first lick, that, you know, because voices is quick once you play that lick.
Yeah.
Right? It moves along. And, you know, unless you're jamming in the middle section, the build, which we do jam in the build a lot too. But unless you're jamming in the build, like, you know, voices is 5 or 6 minutes and it's just like you started and it's over. Right. And so what defines a really great voice is how long the intro is.
Yeah. Right.
That's what. And what's funny is you kind of have to include Mindless Dribble in this conversation at this point.
Yes.
Because Mindless Dribble's had a revival over the second half of this year.
It did.
You know, and you got to give credit where credit's due. Like, a lot of this stuff is happening too because Joey is with us backstage, and he's like, when you have a fan, like, I'll forget this stuff, right? Like, I remembered voices and was like, hey, we should stretch out voices. But I'll forget what happens in like old versions of songs, and having somebody that's like actively listening to this music from like all eras, that's able to pull out versions and be like, hey, listen to this, like techno a C to B, you know, like, and then we end up playing a techno a C to B. Hey, you know, listen to how these dribbles go. Like, we suddenly at Biscoland this year, we played the intro of Dribble. Again, is another thing that, like, if like usually it'll just be like toying around, you know, noodling for like a minute, and then like, you know, the beat comes in, and then within like a minute Barber will just play the lick, da 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 da. But like back in the day, it would go a fucking haywire.
Yeah.
It would get unhinged before we ever got to the song, and we didn't talk about this at Biscoland. At Biscoland, it just happened. Like, Barber just got unhinged at the beginning of the thing. And I, like, knew it was going to be 10 minutes. Like, I just knew. Like, within a minute, I was like, this is going to be a long fucking dribble intro. And it was. And it was great. It was so good. It almost had a Hero vibe. Like, the mm-hmm. but, like, over, like, the descending chord progression that's in Hero kind of is in the intro of. And when we were going to play Dribble this last week in Miami, we were backstage and Joey was like, hey, can I just play the intro of Biscoland Dribble for everybody? Just, you know, just so that you could hear what you did, like what was so epic about it. And like, we listened to it and we were all like, oh wow. Right. That's right. We played like a 9 minute intro or 10 minute intro to Dribble.
Yeah.
And Joey's like, look, you don't need to play a 10 minute intro every time, but these songs are better when you take your time at the very beginning of the song. The more patient that you are before the song starts, the better the song ends up being.
All right, let's get to the actual nominees and then the results. Here are the nominees as selected by the panel.
For the songs.
For Song of the Year. In alphabetical order, starting with By the Time, The Deal.
Oh, By the Time has, yeah, that's a good call. Okay, go on, The Deal.
Falling. Freeze. I Man. One Chance to Save the World. Vasilios. And Voices Insane. Now, Mark, we've heard your picks. I've shared mine. Andy, did you have any songs that we didn't mention that you would have wanted to add to the list?
Not that you didn't mention. I think that what I would add is that the best songs tended to be of the newer catalog, songs that were recently debuted and were, you know, growing a lot over the year. But for the older songs, and I will single out Dribble and Hot Air Balloon as well as being particularly strong this year, and I Man, especially with Dribble and I Man, what really signified the growth of these songs or the resurgence of these songs is kind of you know, the growth of the jam in multiple sections, you know, with I-Man, that's a 2 or 3 jam song. And in 2023, you never knew where the magic was going to be in I-Man. It might be in the middle jam. It might be in the main jam. It might be in the intro or in all three. You know, Mark already talked about the dribble intros this year being particularly strong. The dribble main jams, which are, you know, if you go back to like 99 tapes, those were some of the most like primal, just like insane biscuits. And there have been some particularly strong versions this year. I will jump ahead to the write-ins. Dribble got 3 write-ins. It was not on our list, but got 3 write-ins. And that poll, that poll was done before Miami. And I think, you know, had we done it after Miami, it would certainly get a few more, because the Miami dribble main jam is one of the strongest I've heard in years. It was, you know, shades of helicopters. It was, you know, shades of, you know, just totally different than you would expect and totally unique.
And it's been a while that the dribble outro jam has really been the star of the show, that the main jam has almost just been a waypoint on the road to getting to the outro, which is where the real fireworks start. But I love the fact that we're back to a place where you don't know, as Andy was saying, is it going to be the intro? Is it going to be the main? Is it going to be the outro? Or is it just going to be like an I-Man where pretty much any time you're not singing, it might be an opportunity for you to explore?
Yeah, and it's funny because halfway through the year, Joey came backstage with a performance of Dribble from like 2009 where the middle jam had a 4-on-the-floor beat in it, not a funk beat. And we listened to it and he was like, he was like, listen, I think the middle jam of Dribble we can shake up a little bit. And like, this is one thing that you guys can do to it that you've done before. And we tried it out and the next 3 dribbles were monstrous. Like, you know, it's just like, we're a little more comfortable over that beat. And like, it opened us up to like, you know, it opened our ears up to like the possibilities of how many different cool things can happen in a dribble, especially like going to Miami, because at the beginning of the Miami dribble, I almost kind of fell into a rhythm that was reminiscent of the Biscoland dribble. And I very quickly was like, we had already played kind of a Biscolandy intro, you know, kind of we touched on the same changes, the descending changes of the intro, and it was fucking awesome again. And it was long and like robust and like really played out. And we hit that intro part all together. It was like obvious that it was about to happen. That's like the best moments in the biscuits where like we play a jam and we're done with the jam. And before we play the first notes of the song, everybody in the place, including everybody on stage, knows that those notes are coming in like 3 seconds. Right. And it's like when you know it's coming and then it comes, there's a satisfaction, you know, intellectually, with like understanding the language, which the fans understand the language too. They may not play the instruments. A lot of them do play instruments very, very well. We found that out over the pandemic, but you know, like having a group of people all tuned in to like Barber's language at the end of that dribble to like whatever like lick he played in the last like 4 bars that said, I'm done.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that phrase.
Yeah.
Like it's like a language. Like he may as well get to that moment, walk up to the microphone and be like, okay guys, I'm done with the solo now, because his lick that he plays is those words. Like he's able to say, okay guys, I'm done with this solo now without using the words. He says it musically and he is literally saying that sentence. Like it's weird that like he can like musically say a sentence of that we understand, but not just we understand, everybody in the whole venue understands it. It's like you speak Barber, you know.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like we,
we all speak barber, like the language of barber. And you have to, because, you know, back in the day when we weren't fluent in it, it was hard. A lot of our fights that we used to get in back in the day were about that, about not understanding the language. And it's like, dude, I don't know the language yet. Like, you know, like that's how it, like, you know, a lot of like our friction was like barber was saying shit and people weren't catching it because we weren't fluent in barber yet.
Yeah.
But now it's been 24 years and everybody, we're all together, understand language to the point where we can tell each other, I have my licks that say, hey, this is where I'm about to change to the next key, and I'll do something in the end, like of a 16 bar loop that says, hey, you know, this is it. So, you know, anyway, we're all speaking barber.
We're speaking barber. Yeah. Well, Andy, do you want to take us through the top three vote getters in the Song of the Year category?
Yeah, absolutely. So coming in at third place, scoring around 10% of the votes, 81 votes total, we have By the Time, third place Song of the Year.
Wow.
So for By the Time, obviously a late addition to the catalog, coming in, you know, mid-June, and then achieving that kind of growth in such a short time. I know I personally singled out 923 Indianapolis, 1028 at the Cap, and even the most recent version in Miami as being particularly strong versions of the song.
Fascinating that By the Time should come on so strong by the end of the year, especially when we can acknowledge that it was a song that got a mixed response at first.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I would like to add, though, that if you look at the I don't have the Jam of the Year categories in front of me yet, so I'm interested to hear what people think about it. But like what I'm pretty tapped in with, you know, the fans and how they feel about shit in the first place. So the jams that everybody really, really seemed to think were the best jams of the night a lot of the time this year were jams where I was playing on the keyboard.
Yes.
And with this is an interesting kind of development, right? Because like the how we play when I'm on the keyboard, we call it tractor beam mode, right? Like that's what we call it. But like we're not playing note for note like DJ songs like we were during the tractor beam like moment when we did Tractor Beam out at the 10 Mile Music Hall in Frisco, and what we did a bunch of different Tractor Beam shows, one at the Sony Hall. We were doing a concept, and the concept was, everybody knows, we were taking whole sets by DJs that had mixes, like seven mixes through seven songs, an hour's worth of like DJ mixes, Carl Cox in Ibiza playing seven songs, some of them his, some of them other people's songs. The songs would mix from like keys that don't even match together. And we would like do that. We would like go in and play like the way the mix was played out. And we would do that for an hour, and we would try to get as close as we could note for note to what Carl Cox was doing. And, you know, like some people were like really loved it. And like some people, like, again, we talked earlier about like having to not listen to the fans in order to achieve what we wanted to achieve with the new songs, because, you know, there will be resistance to everything that you do if you're doing something different. And when we went to do this tractor beam thing, you know, even after the first night, we had to put out like a statement on Instagram, because, it was like a Brené Brown quote, you know, because like we about like, you know, we had to like put a statement out about like vulnerability, because that's how vulnerable we felt, like doing something this different in front of all of our fans on live on stage. But we would say to them when they would question us, and there was a couple of very vocal people online who were anti-tractor beam, like a couple, not a lot, but like a couple, but it was so vocal that it was like get in your head a little bit, you know what I mean? Like they're like so like outwardly against this creative thing you're doing. But what we would say
was just trust the process, which sounds like a nice, like an easy thing to say when you're from Philadelphia, right? It was like the Sixers said, trust the process. The process didn't work with them, right? Like, it's been like 5 years since trust the process. And like, yeah. They are like, it, maybe it did work, because are they like, at one point this year, they were like 12-0, right? Like, the Sixers, I think, are great right now. So maybe the process worked. Well, the Biscuits are great right now too, right? And like, part of the greatness is this moment that we have in the show that is mimicking what we learned in that moment. Everybody goes to their setup. Like, you know, Alan goes to his e-drums. Magner goes to his like computer, like sync on the click, like the click comes on. I have a thing called a sidechain compressor, which is how we get that swelly sound, that wah, 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 you know, which is like a indicative of like trance, like, you know, like psychedelic trance. Back in the day, they like basically, you know, the kick drum, when the kick drum hits, everything else ducks down. And then as the kick drum releases, all of the music swells back in. And that's like a authentic electronic music sound that only was possible to be made on stage with the Biscuits in like the last 18 months or 2 years. So there's technology that's out now that allows us to do in real time live things that, like, you know, like pre-recorded DJ sets, you know, or like DJs who are mixing records, like, or like bands like Odessa do, because they're playing off of computers and the stuff has been built out in the studio, but we're now doing it live. I'm hitting it on my keyboard and the sound is hitting. Magner's hitting on his keyboard and the sound's swelling. Our like pedals are like set to the same setting, so they swell at the same rate. So, they're the same, we have the same pedal on, and, you know, we get everything synced up to the click. Like, everybody's doing this thing that it is only possible to do because we learned how to do it while we were doing Tractor Beam.
Yeah.
So in the, it's notable to me that the Vasilios in St. Louis seems like a jam that people were like freaking out about. The By the Time at the Cap was a jam that everybody was freaking out about. It's got to be considered one of the jams of the year. I mean, if that's not on the jam of the year list, I'd be surprised. It was, you know, probably my jam of the year was that jam. It was so fun. Like, and I'm, you know, it's no different than what we're doing in a lot of the other sections that are similar to this, which is actually the changes that we're playing through these sections are all changes that came from other Tractor Beam songs that we've played. So it's like, we are like, we are referencing the songs that we learned, but like Barber and Magner are like improvising on top of this stuff in the style of Carl Cox's mix. You know what I mean? So we're like really playing like tech house or minimal house in these sections. And it's so different and it's so technological and it's so tight. And so anyway, you know, I don't like, it was like a, when we said trust the process, I didn't even know what the fuck we were saying. Like, we got here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the important part. The important part is now that the iteration of that is a lot of fans' favorite part of the whole entire night.
Yeah.
So that's cool. The one in Indianapolis, what was on keyboard in Indianapolis? It was really good. I remember that.
That was One Chance.
One Chance. Yeah. That was really great jam. So anyway, notable that those jams are the things that are remembered by a lot of people at this point in the year.
Definitely.
Pretty cool.
Definitely.
That's pretty cool.
And we'll have a lot more to say on that in the Jam of the Year category. Wow. Andy, second place Song of the Year category. Wow.
Well, I think that the idea of, you know, letting the fans talk and not letting it affect the creative process very much plays into the third place By the Time. I think there's a lot of fans.
I think the second place as well.
Yes. And as I was getting to, yes, the second place very much so with around 11%, 90 votes, Freeze took second place song of the year. Lot of cool developments in Freeze through 2022 as well, continuing into 23. I think going back to something I said earlier with, you know, the most exciting songs this year are the multi-jam songs. So Freeze has had some really cool intro jams, has had some really cool main jams, like the middle or whatever, internal jams, and some, you know, really cool outros as well. I think Max and I both selected March 24th at the Capitol Theater as probably, that would be probably my favorite Freeze of the year. I loved that whole set. The Freeze at Dewey Beach, August 13th. Was also a particularly discussed version, and a lot of that for the jam into it as well. And I was reviewing some of the older versions from the you know, the earlier winter shows, and both Penn's Peak and I believe either Albany or I think it was Albany had, you know, really large main jams as well. So a lot of activity, a lot of action happening, in Freeze this year.
Yeah. And one thing that's really cool about Freeze in 23 was the middle jam hasn't solidified into like, this is the Freeze jam. Right. And so it really is probably one of the most type two jams of all of the jams that we have with the new songs. Shocked, I think, is probably the other one.
Yeah.
Where definitely. we have a section in the middle that, you know, kind of opens up slowly and patiently, and we literally have no idea where it's going to go. And every single time we play these songs, the middle jam is totally different. Now, like, the intro jam of Freeze is like geared towards Freeze. There's been a couple, I'm trying to remember which one, but there was one this year where we were in just an incredible like funk jam that wasn't Freeze, and then just on a dime we all hit the beginning of Freeze together. But generally we kind of inch our way towards it, and to where ultimately it's being played in the bass and the drums, you know, before John and Aaron sell out completely to the song.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't believe that, like, just like, again, you guys touched on it. Both of these songs, there was a lot of resistance to when we first played them. So with 800 people voting, the fact that By the Time and Freeze made it into the top three really says a lot about not only just like how great the songs are and the material that's getting written, but how great things can get if you just play them every other night. I remember there was a time in the year where this fan from that came to see us out west in LA and Solana Beach made a snarky comment on Twitter to me that we had played a lot of By the Times. Like, I was making fun of some other band playing a song a lot of times, and this fan like was defending, and he was like, you know, you played a lot of By the Times. And he's right. We played a lot of By the Times. We were playing it every other night.
And
right?
Yeah. That was, and like, it paid off.
It paid off, right?
That's what you have to do. Yeah. You have to play a song a lot in order for the song to evolve.
Okay, number one. I got to know.
All right. This was,
are we ready?
This was our most statistically significant outlier. I mean, just utter blowout victory with more than a third of all 800 votes that came in, 272 of the votes, 35% of the total tallied, The Deal, Song of 2023.
Wow. There you have it.
No surprises. I mean, you know, if you look at the timestamps of the fall tour Deal, you know that there's something good happening in there. I mean, like, the, you know, 28-minute mark, 33-minute mark. We singled out Austin, Milwaukee, Cap Theater, 1028. Like you were saying earlier, these are widely considered to be the top shows of the year. And a large factor of that is, you know, a big 25 plus minute deal. It's got everything that I think most Biscuit fans are looking for. It's, I mean, at the end of the day, I can only speak for myself, but I feel like a lot of people feel this way. Biscuits.
Well, apparently they do. They voted. You polled them.
I think Biscuits fans at the end of the day just want to hear just the most insanely evil shit possible. And the deal really scratches that itch. It's got, you know, the big main jam, which is developing. And honestly, there's still a lot of potential there. The huge intros that we started seeing over the fall tour. It's been a monster.
The deal does something to the room. And the first time I noticed it was on March 31st in the Mission. When the deal is playing, when you're deep into the deal, the entire venue has a completely different atmosphere. People are dancing differently. People are behaving differently, especially with the lighting keyed in. It is a dark, dirty, fucked up sort of vibe in there where people are just like scrunching up their faces. People are kind of like, you know, moving in a very kind of like sensual way. It really just takes people to a completely different place. And the payoff with the choruses, the fist pumping choruses interspersed with these dark, deep descents. It's really just something that I feel like crystallizes what you do. And if it were up to me to, you know, go to someone who's never heard of you and say, hey, I'm going to pick 30 minutes of music for you. Not going to be the best example of this band's playing, the best example of this band's singing. It's going to be the best example of the ineffable quality that this band can create in a room. It's going to be a version of the deal from 2023.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny. A bunch of years ago, I was at, Jones Beach. I was at Jones Beach, and it was like in the years that Phish was on hiatus. And I think that this was at the time that Trey and Mike were playing with the duo, with Joe and Marco from the duo. Grab was the band. They were opening for Phil and Friends at Jones Beach. And they were playing a couple of duo songs in their set, like Becky or whatever, like Benevento Russo duo songs. And the fans in mass, like, you know, those songs are great songs, and the duo is an amazing band that's like undeniably one of the coolest things that happened in our music scene, like while we were coming up and as a scene, was like these two guys that were on another fucking level, Joe and Marco, on another level. When you scale the duo song out with those four players into like a room that has like 8,000 or 10,000 people, those 8,000 or 10,000 people didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to dance during the duo song. As a result, they didn't dance. So you had like 8,000 people watching the song, and the song was cool. It was like a cool performance. But I remember taking note when they finished the song, they dropped into Gotta Jaboo, let's say, you know, or one of those songs from that era of Tab, that there was like, you know, Jaboo or Heavy Things. It might have been Heavy Things. Either way, it doesn't matter if it was Jaboo or Heavy Things. It was one of those songs that's over the beat that everybody knows how to dance to at a Phish or Dead event, and the place exploded and started dancing like it was a Phish show. And I saw it happen. I was like, this was 8,000 people just standing there like perplexed about what to do. And then there was 8,000 people that the energy was off the charts just from the beat dropping, right? It was just the beginning of Jabu, you know, whatever. Dan, dan, dan. The place just starts going off. And I was like, wow, that was incredible. And that's when I noticed that fans are sort of programmed to like be able to dance. Like, you know, when I go to see the bands that I like, there's certain tempos that really work. And, you know, like I said this on Twitter earlier in the year, like at a Fish show, it's like in the 90s or 100, like, you know, there's like that mid-tempo, like Sand or like, you know, First Tube or like, you know, MoMA Dance or like that whole region of like 2001, you know, like Tweezer. The reason people love these songs is because they know how to dance to them.
Yeah.
They start playing the songs, right? And so for the Biscuits, I started noticing that when we would play at 132 beats per minute, the place just goes the craziest.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot for like maximum movement from our fans, right? And yeah. So when John came to me with the deal, first of all, I had the original demo I couldn't make sense of. I didn't know where the beat was. I was very confused by it. I didn't understand the song when I first heard it. So it wasn't necessarily my favorite from the bunch. It ended up my favorite. But at first, when I first heard it, it took me a little while to like make sense of what the bass line was and where it went, like how it like lined up with the beat. But then the like horny, like the horn part that like drives like the electricity section, yeah. Is like this like EDM kind of anthemic thing that's going on. And on even on the demo, I can hear it's like really, really cool and just like really huge. And he said to me, I feel like we can make this like orc theme. Like, you know, when we're playing orc theme, like when we hit that big fill and drop into orc theme, that's the like one of the biggest. I make sure I'm always looking up because the place goes apeshit. So fun to watch. And when we hit it well, when we do it right, it's like, you know, it's the biggest moment of the set, like in terms of in terms of maximum movement,
yeah,
and like connection with like the crowd and the band. And so we were playing the deal at like 124 beats per minute, where he like wrote all of these songs at like 124 beats per minute. We've since moved them around, like, you know, Spago's Last Stand's a little slower, the deal and by the Time are a little faster. But I told him that I was like, man, I was at a show a bunch of years ago and I saw like what happened when like when the band switched over to the tempo that the fans know how to dance at, and the place went fucking apeshit. And I think like 132 from like the orc theme, like you bring it up, like we can make it like orc themes at 132. Let's just like put this song there and see what happens. And we put it at 132, and it turned into like the best song we have. And now it's ranked the number one song of the year. So by the way, just for like,
by a crushing margin,
just for reference, By the Time, I also like just said to Alan, like pretty much every time I'm like, hey, like 132 is the sweet spot, like let's just play this at 132. And so we're playing By the Time and the deal both at the same tempo that we play orc theme at. And I think that there's like something there. Like this is a tempo that we're tuned into as a group of people. Like, you know, the way that yes, like 140 is a tempo that like a whole fan base of like dubstep people, you know, listen to at halftime. Like it's like that was the tempo that drove that whole movement, that 140 played at 70, and like, you know, like Tech House like is all between like 124 and 127, you know what I mean? And it's like we're a little faster than that. We're like 129 to like 132, and 132 is pretty much recap all of this. We used to play it like 135 for like a lot of like Abraxas and etc. But, you know, I think a big part of what you're seeing in the top three songs of the year here is that our fan base loves to dance at 132 beats per minute. And I've seen bios on Twitter, 132 BPM dancer, like, you know, like people like, yeah,
really.
So like, love it. So there's that. And then like, it's just like, as we figured the song out, the changes are magnificent. The chorus is massive. You know what I mean? Like it started out with just like, only the bass was only hitting a D the whole entire song. Like that's what the bass line that they gave me was, like, just like play D the whole entire song. And I did, like, for the first one or two. And then little by little, I started hearing different notes under there and moving keeping the rhythm, but moving the bass line to different notes in there. And then again, Joey's like always wants us to stretch the intros out. If there's a stretched out intro, you can bet Joey was backstage being like, hey, stretch the intro, freeze, stretch the intro out, shock, stretch the intro out, to be continued, stretch the intro out, like mindless dribble, stretch the intro out. By the time stretch, like, and we're like, we get it, dude, stretch all the intros out. But, yeah. but with the deal specifically, and I-Man who's always like, I-Man, like, let it build, let it go. Yeah. Like, you know, like hold it. If we had jumped into an I-Man quickly in Miami, it was because we were like running out of time or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, that's the only reason. Yeah. We'll skip a long intro on I-Man. But yeah, man, the deal, I'm with it. That's my song of the year too, and I would have voted, probably looking at all of the songs that you guys had, I would have probably voted, looking back at this now, you have to give the deal number one because of just what's happened over the last couple of months. I don't know that I would put By the Time in the top three, but definitely top five. And I would probably bring one of the other songs that popped up in a lot of great shows, like Voices or one of the older songs, into my top three. I don't know which one. Voices or Hot Air Balloon. Probably for me, it's Hot Air Balloon, because those just like moments, those three specific moments, Milwaukee, it popped up. Great outro jam, great back into jam, huge, you know, huge, just huge set, the whole Hot Air Balloon set. So those three. But yeah, the deal, I mean, the deal did it. Let's hear it for the deal. I mean, this is an this is an exciting moment, because what I didn't see coming a year ago was that our three best songs of the year were all going to be new songs. What rounds out the top like seven?
I can do that real quick. So let's see here. So we nominated, what was it? Eight. Yeah, okay. We nominated eight. So Vasilios came in at number eight with 22 votes. Falling with 49 at number seven. One Chance was 61. Voices with 62. And I-Man with 64. So I-Man would be number four. And then the top three, there's a big jump up from 64 votes for I-Man to like 81 for By the Time. So the fan consensus seems to be that the new songs are really hitting, I think.
Well, that's really great. I mean, that's now, you know, the thing is a lot of people on the periphery don't know these songs yet. You know what I mean? It's like when you look at what's happening right now, it's a very interesting time in the Disco Biscuits, because it's almost like we're a new band, right? Like we're going out and playing a big tour across the whole country with an arsenal of songs that a lot of people are going to be seeing for the first or second time. And those are our best songs right now. So we've got to be playing them, right? We got to stick with what's working. And it's, what's funny is, like, it's hard. Before these songs were written, John, like, mentioned, he was like, we need to have like five new set closers, like maybe 10 new set closers, like huge epic songs, like, you know. And like we have song, like, you know, we close the set with, we like to, with Why We Dance, can close the set with To Be Continued, we can close the set with Twisted, we can close the set with Another Plan of Attack. These songs didn't even make it into the top eight, and like the they were epic, yeah. You know, they were epic songs all year long. But, you know, I think that By the Time was heavily influenced by recency bias of the Capitol Theater Jam. So let's go to Jam of the Year. Is Jam of the Year next?
Song of the Year first, show of the year second, and we'll culminate with Jam of the Year. So Show of the Year. Now, we've already been called out for this. We take full ownership of the fact that this is decidedly biased toward the second half of the year. This is not to say that we don't think that there were countless fantastic shows during the first half of the year. It's simply the case that there were so many good shows from June onward that for us to have recognized all of the shows from the first half of the year and to do credit to those great shows from June onward, the category would have just got too big. So we've got lots of honorable mentions to get through. But first, let me take you through the nominees.
Wait, before you nominate, I have to step in before you nominate. I just want to go off of my memory of the year. I just want to say that things that I feel like the year took a couple of weeks to, you know, like maybe the second or like the second run of the year was the Caverns. And that's when it really started to heat up. And I think you have to give an honorable mention to the movie, the Fifth Element movie Jam. Like if it wasn't nominated, then it should have been probably nominated. And then, and then we'll find out. I don't know. I really think it's hard to be leaving 3/23/23 at the Capitol Theater off of the list of best shows of the year. At the very least,
yes.
Park Avenue, Shelby Rose, Reactor, contextually in the moment where we had been, with this being the second Park Avenue in a really long time, and we hadn't really been playing Reactor, we hadn't really been playing Shelby, and we come out and just murder an inverted Shelby into an inverted Reactor. And I feel like this Reactor was unhinged to the point where, and the whole set was just incredible. And so that set, probably if I was on the nominating committee, I would have to, at the very least, instantly give it an honorable mention and nominate it into the pool of shows that we're considering from nominating. And then, you know, when you the next thing that I think needs to be mentioned is the Mission Ballroom shows. I don't know if anything got nominated there, but there was some really, really great stuff that happened there that that was really, really exciting. The whole entire thing was so great. And then I remember playing Spin Me Round there and just being like blown away by like what the energy in the room was. It was going off during the end of that set. That was on the 31st. So, you know, I think then after that, Iceland is the next thing that happened where it was like, oh my God, this is so fucking great. And the whole entire thing felt that way. But that third night in Iceland was a whole different energy. So, and we talked about that earlier. So those shows, are the first, the shows that I think are notable in the first half of the year. Like it was a good years. It was a good 6 months, but it was really driven by how insane the Caverns, Iceland. And then I'd be remiss not to mention that actually Summer Camp Festival was really, mm-hmm. really great. Like the late night, both of the shows there came off great, but especially the second night, the late night show that we played with a big Tricycle Tourist, I Feel Love section and Falling was in there. And like, it was a huge, huge crowd. And the band just came right off of Iceland playing as well as we've played in a really, really long time and put down probably our two best festival sets, that kind of situation in a really long time. So, you know, and then it's the second half of the year. Okay. So I just wanted to, in the interest of the nominees being heavy in the second half of the year, what I wanted to do is point out what I remember from the first half of the year being really special. And I think looking back on the whole year now, Iceland, the Caverns, and the Cap were as good as any of the great things that happened, like in the fall, you know, Austin, Hartford, Milwaukee, all of the other Cap shows. Like there was a lot of highlights in the fall, and they were probably even more consistent than, you know, it got better and better as the year went on. We played 69 shows. It's gotten more consistent as we've gone. And looking back at the set lists, it's obvious. It's obviously gotten more consistent. It got to the point somewhere in the summer tour where it just was like every show was better than the next, which is our goal. Okay, so the nominees.
If I may, I think that one of the reasons why I am biased toward the second half of the year has to do with set list construction, and also with, you know, some of the conversations we had earlier about letting those slow builds into the intros of some of the big heavy hitter songs take their time.
Great.
I think the first half of the year, there was more of the seven plus nine song sets where there was just a lot of material and a lot of changes on a dime, like DJ changes or, you know, hit the jam of one song and immediately start playing the intro to the next song.
On purpose, purposefully. Well, we had to do that because we have too many new songs. And if we don't play seven in the first set, then we don't get to practice the songs and they don't get the deal. If we don't do that for the first 5 months, the deal isn't what it is at the end of the year. And, you know, that's like the reality of the situation is the reason that the new songs had the chance to develop like that is because we were playing two extra songs. And the only way to get two extra songs in is to do one, what I call on the dime transition per set. It can't be six huge jams in every set. You know, sometimes you got to move it along. So yes, but now looking back on the year, I can see that was like part of the process to get where we are right now.
The comparison that I've heard from a few people is likening it to the development between like spring 2002 and fall 2002, where you have where you have in those like spring 02 shows very tight, well played and well constructed sets that work in a lot of the songs, and then when you move into the fall tour, things get jammier again, and you're, you know, hitting haymakers and letting the stuff breathe. So
amazing. Yeah, it's a good analogy. You know, that definitely did happen this year, and as the year went on, we clearly got more comfortable. We clearly, you know, like changed our set list, you know, like rules a little bit, made it a little bit less stringent, and that was for the better.
Yeah,
I agree.
And you're definitely not alone. I'll let Max go first, but you were definitely not alone in thinking that the beginning of the year should be shown some love as well.
Yeah. Okay. So the nominees.
The nominees are June 8th, the Lincoln Theater in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Ah, great one.
July 14th. We've already talked about that second set, the Midtown Ballroom in Bend.
Great.
August 13th, Dewey Beach, the Bottle and Cork, the basis from that show. By the time at the Cap, I think there's been more ink spilled over analyzing that jam than any other from the past year.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Don't remember it.
September 16th at the Empire Garage in Austin, start to finish. Just to me, this was my pick. This was the perfect biscuit show for the year.
Night two
in Austin. September 23rd, Vogue Theater in Indianapolis. Very competitive field in that Midwestern tour night after night was just fantastic. But September 23rd, Vogue was the one that stood out. And then closing off with two shows up in the Northeast, October 7th, Biscoland, and October 28th at the Cap.
Great.
Andy, do you want to take us through the honorable mentions before we get to the results?
Absolutely. So this was our most competitive write-in, I think. Most competitive for like the top spot as well. But this is where we also saw the largest portion of write-in votes. I think because a lot of people had strong feelings, not just about the beginning of the year, but also on this or that omission. And so about 15 or 16% of the votes that we got were actually write-in votes. And what I found especially interesting was that there did seem to be consensus favorites in each era or each run of the year. I kind of anticipated that it would be more spread out, but there are consensus favorites that it seems like we missed, which many of which you mentioned. Movie Night at the Caverns received 6 write-ins, and Night One of the Cap in March received 4. Those were kind of like the favorites of the early part of the year. Night 3 in Iceland received 8 votes. That was kind of the favorite of spring. Richmond, June 9th in Richmond also received 8 votes. And I think that, there was some pushback on some of our nominations. Some people perhaps preferred Richmond to Raleigh, and so it got a little bit of write-in love. Solana Beach received 7 votes.
Raleigh had a moment, though, that was one of the best of the whole. There was moments at Raleigh that were some of the best of the whole year. I guess we're going to get to Jam of the Year at some point, but by the time at Raleigh was like a moment where it was like nobody knew what we were playing, and the intro of it was really fucking great, and Barbara was like going haywire.
Yeah.
And I just remember like when we finished that show, the place just, that was another cheer of the year. I mean, it was like the people were just so happy that we were in Raleigh. It was, I think people might have, if you were there, you know how special it was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you weren't there, maybe it's hard to capture what the energy was like in the room. Okay, go on.
For sure. Just closing it out, 2 more nods. Solana Beach, July 22nd, had 7 votes and was kind of like the popular write-in option for the West Coast tour. And Milwaukee was our biggest write-in vote getter, receiving 14 votes. I will fess up. I was the nominator for Indianapolis, and I caught a little bit of flack on Fantasy Tour for not choosing Milwaukee over Indianapolis. I think that more people than I anticipated saw that as the more compelling show. But regardless,
my take was always that Milwaukee might have had the best moment of the year, but the show on its own did not stand toe to toe with some of the others in our top nominees. The hot air balloon into the deal is, I think, one of the best things that you guys have ever done. I think it's something we could study for years and still find a lot in there that we haven't heard yet. But the rest of the show, not to say that the rest of the show was poor or anything even close to that. It's just, when we're talking about show of the year, we're talking about from the first note to the encore. What's the perfect show of the year? The show where everything went off as well as could possibly go.
Right. My memory of that run is that Milwaukee was the highlight of the run, but there's bias for me. It was a theater. It had a super high ceiling. There was like a packed balcony. The crowd had the highest energy, I think, of that whole run. It's a better room than the Vogue in terms of from the stage. It's a better stage. It's just a more professional, like the Vogue's great. No disrespect to the Vogue. Like it got nominated. The Vogue got nominated. But, you know, I think of those 5 shows that week, all legendary rooms, but Milwaukee had a certain something that I remember being like, it's another one of those. If you were in the room, there was an energy between the fans and the band that transcends what notes were played. And I agree that Hot Air Balloon Into the Deal was probably top three things that we did all year long. Definite Jam of the Year contender for me. But it was more, it's something less tangible than the notes on the page, the music, the sound in your ears that, that elevated that experience, you know, for me. It was just a positive, joyous experience, right? And in Indianapolis was different than that. It was, but probably if I were going to go and listen back to the shows, which I haven't done, but if I were going to go do that, like, I know that my reaction to it is going to be different than from what I expected or what I thought happened, right? A lot of what I'm judging is just like moments, right? There was a moment at the Cap that was so crazy that it took me into that place that's not like on this plane, right? And like that spiritual place where you're going to, I guess it's called flow state, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but when, for us, it's different than just like going into flow state, because there's nights where John's in flow state, but I'm not, you know? So like there, I'm talking about a moment where all four of us enter into flow state at the same time, right? Or at least three out of the four of us, but you could feel when three of the four of us get into flow state, but especially when you're in it, like, you know, that's what, you know, that's those moments of flow. Like, it could happen for 10 minutes. Like at the Cap, it could have just been 10 minutes of flow state, but there could be like a show that like is better objectively. All everybody agrees that from note one to the last note of the show, it's more consistent, more interesting, better jams, better sound, everything's better song list or whatever. But you might not, the band may not have entered flow state at all during that whole entire thing.
Yeah.
So like, I'll take like 5 minutes of the zone over like a better like 3 hours of music where nobody goes into the zone the whole entire time, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think it needs to be mentioned when you're talking about like what's good or what you like or what's the best thing that happened or whatever. These are obviously all subjective things, right? And so you know I'm judging on a different scale, but I think that the fans judge on flow state too, right? Because like when we're in the zone, like they know we're in the zone and they get into the zone with us, right? It's like when we're all locked together, like the fans can be in flow state. So,
well, I think the results speak exactly to this dichotomy you're describing between is a show defined by a moment, a flow state, you know, a 5 minute segment, or is it defined by the entirety? The fans, I think, have weighed in kind of conclusively here. Andy, you want to take us through the results? Top three vote getters?
I can't wait.
Absolutely. And coming in at third place, 16.5%, 120 votes. We have September 16th in Austin, Max Dawson's personal favorite show, winning the bronze. I was shocked that this was not the number one choice, if I'm being perfectly honest. The buzz after the show was truly legendary. There really isn't a bad moment on tape. I remember sitting down and listening to the tape and listening to that ACB that opens the show. And I remember there's a point in the last jam where, you know, Barbara plays the ending riff and it kind of plays it like slower than I am used to hearing. I'm like, oh, that's kind of a weak Aceta beat to start it off. But then the jam just goes for like 10 more minutes. And
Barbara wanted to end that too soon. And Mark, I think it was you, shot him a look. And
I shook him off.
Yeah, that was, thank you for that. Because
it sets the tone for the whole show. There's creative exploration. There's patience. It features the deal, a signifier of great shows in 2023. So, I mean, you know,
the second set of that show has 4 or 5 moments that are each one of them could stand alone as, you know, a show defining moment. It's the jam into I Man, the jam out of I Man, the jam out of Falling, the Space Bird back into I Man.
The one for me is Falling into Space Bird. It's, I just so remember good. the moment that, like, I don't even know what happened from falling to Spacebird. It doesn't even matter. What matters is what I was talking about earlier. When Magner hit the first notes of Spacebird, me, Aaron, John, Alan, and everybody else in the entire room knew that we were one bar, two bars away from hitting the first notes of Spacebird. It just, we dropped into it. And like that, executing the end of a jam like that and all have having a peak that peaks and then like comes down and then like hits the next section all together, all at the same moment. Not easy to do. And when it's executed perfectly, that just that moment in itself is worth it's that's the payoff for all of the patients to get there. You know what I mean? It's just about really what we're doing is we're setting up large sets of four, you know, large sets of 16 bars, right? Like that's what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's like four sets of 16 bars. And when we're really great, like the whole thing ends at the end of the 64th bar, like the 128th bar, you know what I mean? Like if when everybody can hear it coming, it's because it's coming at the right moment over a huge amount of time, over a long period of time. So I think for Empire Garage, my one comment would be it was the room was kind of grungy. I liked it. Like we're friends with the guy who like owns it. It was the guy was super cool. Went to college with us, like had a great time down there. But like it again, it like goes into your experience like of like, is the stage great? Is the room big? Is the ceiling high? Is the theater ornate? Is like the sound great? You know, like are all of these other factors that I think probably if we played that exact show, but it was in like the cap, it's the number one show of the year.
A Northeast venue would definitely help.
Recency bias is a factor, regional bias, but also just the quality of the venue. You're right.
Quality of the venue. Okay. Number two
coming in second place, 18%, 131 votes. Night two of Biscoland, October 7th. For me, I mean, when we're talking about the great moments versus the full show, there's a lot going on in this show, but it really comes down to the Dribble Confro as like the singular great pillar of that show. Now that segment of music is almost an hour in itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wouldn't exactly be fair to say it's, you know, just one moment. Just one moment happens to be, you know, the bulk of a full set. I think it's fair
and
to
we'll
say
talk
that,
about yeah, that. We'll talk about that jam more, but yes. Yeah, Andy, I just really want to underscore that. I tried to pull an excerpt out from that just to kind of representative moment. It would, like I could pull out a moment of Hot Air Balloon Deal. Like I know exactly the part that I want to play for something, like the 4 minutes. I know exactly the part of By the Time Buddha that I would want to play for someone. The Dribble Confrontation, you have to listen to the entirety. It is a slow boil and it is such a powerful moment and obviously wasn't there. So I can't speak to it, but you were talking, Mark, about the bias that comes from the experience. From all accounts, sounds like it was a very special experience for everyone who's in attendance, a real feeling of homecoming. So to combine those two, and it's a pretty clear-cut explanation for why this show performed so well.
Yeah, and a great venue and an inverted kitchen mitts, the first time that ever happened publicly. Another home again that was a emotional placement of home again, like ending a set with I-Man and then another set with Spacebird and then the encore with home again. It's like three huge moments of peaks at the end of shows. And also another thing, again, like, so I like learn things from seeing other bands, but like it occurred to me that every now and then we should do a whole entire set with all songs from like 2004 and before, like every now and then.
Yeah.
Like we're playing so many new songs. And by the way, the top three songs of the year, and like, you know, were new songs. So that's, it speaks to like, we can play the new songs. We played the deal here in this show, but the only new song in this whole entire show was the deal. And it's, and it came in number two for the year. So
yeah,
it's an interesting dichotomy to the last category of best song of the year, where the top three were all new. This particular show, something clicked in the Mindless Dribble confrontation, but the fact that it was just like one classic after another, like, you know, Dribble, Confrontation, Orc Theme, Lady, Space Bird. It's just, there's something that happens when like the song starts and it's one of your favorite things in the world. And then the next song starts and it's also one of your favorite things in the world. And then that happens six times in a row.
Yeah.
So we chose this show to do that to the fans. Like, we chose that set. Like, let's make a set where it's just every song, everyone in the room that's been with us for a long time is going to say that this is my jam. Yeah. Oh my God, this is also my jam. Oh my God, this is also my jam. This is everybody's jam. So, all right, well, that worked. And number two.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because I mean, fans have been clamoring for like a Biscuits Central Biscuits Fest for so long. It makes sense that you would do, you know, a real treat for the people who see every show. Coming in at number one, surprising and very close. 20%, 146 votes, also contains the deal. The deal went 3 for 3 on Show of the Year, October 28th at the Capitol Theater. I mean, if I am going to go for broke and try to defend my decision, I also put this one in the nomination. I also, I want to just say it is not just By the Time Buddha. Obviously that, you know, towers over everything. But there is so much cool stuff going on. It, especially the first half of the second set.
There was a 10 minute Run Like Hell intro. Like another moment where we stopped before we came out on stage and said, hey, like $49.99, like we came out onto stage and it was like 15 minutes before we got to Run Like Hell. Like, but it was like Run Like Hell right from the first second.
Yes.
Right. And after the set was over, like our manager called and he was like, man, the fans like called Run Like Hell in the first note, like online, everybody was just like Run Like Hell. And it's like, then it was like 10 minutes before you hit the song.
Yeah.
Shades of 99 like a, there for sure.
Yeah. And then again, you have the second, like, you know, it's like second set, second song, the deal. That's, you know, we're not going to do things the same every time, but there's been a sort of pattern with shows that have the deal in the second position behind a classic, like a classic Disco Biscuit song opening the second set. So I don't want to say that there's a formula here, but I'm noticing that, you know, when we do certain things, people seem to like it a lot. And that's one of them. And then you have One Chance to Save the World, Basis. The Basis photograph. Basis was huge. Like, the photograph was huge. Surprised that photograph wasn't in the conversation at all for Song of the Year, because it was really like it may have been more consistent than By the Time right from the beginning of it.
I actually neglected to mention it earlier. Photograph did receive more write-in votes than any other song. It received 14 write-in votes. So,
wow. Yeah,
The fans were definitely feeling the same way. That is similarly to the deal, you know, the fans just want to hear the really evil, dark stuff, I think.
Yeah, Photographs got like some really like cool half step, like, and like tritonal, like, you know, the devil's tone, like tritonal stuff in the first couple notes of it, which are like, it defines, you know, the photograph sound. It's, you know, similar to kind of Shadow, has that a little bit in it. And one of the reasons I think the fans like gravitate towards that song and songs like this, like, you know, Abraxas with like a lot of tritones and half steps in it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, One Chance to Save the World, obviously a lot of kind of like half step, like tonal, like dark atonal, like, you know, dissonant stuff, like a lot of notes right next to each other. So yeah, Photograph's got that. And I'm glad that this, you know, like Photograph gets its moment. It wasn't nominated for Song of the Year, but it had a huge kind of play in the show of the year. So the Cap Theater, a little bit of recency bias. I think, you know, obviously you're putting this poll down and that's the last thing that happened. And there's the show that the most people were at, you know, all year long. So, you know, that's to be expected a little bit, but I think it also is a testament to what happens when you play 69 shows in a year. You know, the stuff did get better. I think that sitting here reviewing it and going through it, it's clear that 23 started off, you know, great, but built into the legend of 23, right? It's like, it wasn't like, I think like in 99 is a case where we were just like built in the end of 98. And the beginning of 99 was just massive and it just held up through the whole year. But 23, I can see, is a year that kind of started to pick up steam as it went. And there was good shows on that early summer tour, but it wasn't really until that late summer tour that it got to, you know, that level of where everything was better than the next. And people writing in Solana Beach for the West Coast is like another testament to that. Like, you know, people think the last night of that 14 show tour was the best thing that happened. But like we talked about Bend being great and Portland being great. And like, you know, Becky thinks Blue Lake is the best show of the year. Like, you know, like there wasn't a show that didn't get talked about when I said, what was your favorite thing that happened all year? Oh, when I said that on Twitter a couple months ago or last month, like every show got mentioned.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, wow, we had a really good year. You know, people are like talking about the town ballroom, you know, people are like talking about, you know, just like talking about it all. But the Cap Theater reigns supreme, you know, and again, by the time the deal, Photograph, Basis, Crickets. I mean,
don't forget the Monster. It could have been the Monster that tipped that show over the edge.
I was extremely excited when I heard those opening notes of Monster. I was hoping for that song to make a comeback basically from the moment I heard it. It's just such a infectiously catchy, simple, but so catchy. I loved hearing that again.
When we learned that song, and then I think we played it again at the National in 22, like in Richmond, that song got stuck in my head for like weeks. I like, you know, and it's like not
it's
even
incredibly catchy.
Like, what is it? And like, what's funny is it was written by Monster, right? Like, it's not even the song was written by a guy who's not even a musician, who doesn't even play an instrument. Like he just started playing guitar and bass like in the last like 2 years. And like he wrote Monster and like it's a remarkable thing, you know, and he vibes too is like that, you know, like Vibes is another one where he wrote that too. And it's just so sick. It's such a great melody and such great changes, but Monster's special. Monster has like a thing in it, and I liked the kind of theme that we got going there with you know, Monster and Crickets, and it was Run Like Hell. It was a dark Halloween-y kind of show, so good for that. 10/28/23, the Cap Theater reigning supreme. So okay, now we're going to move on to the jam of the year.
This is Best Picture. This is it. This is what we've all been waiting for. I'm going to take you through the nominees in chronological order. You want to? I forget every time. You go first.
I like to just jump in and talk a little bit without being biased.
Yes.
By what got nominated. You know, Jam of the Year is hard because there's now we're talking about finding what's the one moment that was the best moment that happened in a whole entire year. Okay. One thing that I will say is that I'm anticipating that the jam from Voices into Taurus from Solana Beach is not on the list, but it was one of my favorite jams of the year. So I would just like to point that out as one of my favorite jams of the year.
More so than Voices I Feel Love.
My favorite jams of that West Coast was Voices Taurus. I knew exactly what was going to happen from everybody in the band. I was able to like telegraph what they were going to do. There was a level of telepathy going on during the Voices into Taurus that hadn't been going on at all. Like, you know, like at that level, it was pure, like full on like band, like reading each other's minds. So that's what I'll say about that. Voices into Taurus was one of my favorite. Hot Air Balloon into Deal, we talked about, was one of my favorites. The jam from By the Time Buddha, did we talk about that? Did I mention that? So By the Time Buddha is one of them. Voices Taurus is another. Hot Air Balloon Deal is another for me. I think Vasilios Twisted from the St. Louis. I think a lot of people say that one. I'm going to leave it off, but I know that it's, I know that people love it. What was the one that we were talking about? Oh, I guess you have to put on Dribble and Confrontation. I have to put Dribble Confrontation from Biscoland onto this list. My favorite. We're not talking about the fans' favorites right now. We're talking about my favorite. So there was just so many great like M1s this year. I don't know where how we can leave it off the list of talking about great jams, but we're going to for now. There was one more that we had just spoken about. That I'm trying to remember what it was that we spoke
Falling
about.
Space Bird from Austin.
No, it wasn't that one. It was the other one that you were talking about. Was it a basis or was it? It was another one. I think that was maybe on the computer.
Basis. The Basis Times Square from Delaware.
Yeah, I don't remember that one. The Basis Times Square. So I
was
I'm
it.
Not,
was it the One Chance from Indianapolis? Maybe.
One Chance from Indianapolis was pretty fucking good. Yeah, that was a hot. I mean, I'm not putting that in Jam of the Year category, but that was really, really good. I think that those are the ones that stand out to me. I'm interested to hear what the fans say or what you guys say on the nominating committee and what the fans had to add into that. Because there, you know, like every night I came out of there, like, you know, there's the joke and it was like, this was the best thing that happened all year long. You know, like there was shows like in Boise and Spokane, where it was like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And obviously there was that happened at Pine Creek too. Like, you know, like you said, Caterpillar Voices, I Feel Love was like, was an incredible segment. For sure. But I don't think it's the most listenable segment, which I think, you know, I take listenability into like, you know, there's the how it plays at the show and then the listenability. Did anybody mention the Red Bank show from Count Basie when we were talking about show of the year? Did that get written in at all? Because people seem to really like that show. All right. I think we can go from that list right there.
All right.
And let's hear your list.
Well, here's the nominees. Jam of the Year, chronological order. Started out with an early one. This was an outlier nominated by our friend Rich Steele. February 4th at the Anthem, he singled out The Shocked for special commendation. July 8th, Pine Creek Lodge, The Voices I Feel Love. I understand where you're coming from the listenability standpoint, because there's a part in that transition where it gets very disjointed and noisy, but in a very, to me, intellectually satisfying way, where I could not for the life of me figure out how you were going to get out of it, but you did. And the way that Magner came in very early on with a little bit of a I Feel Love tease, and then you went way out far into weird territory again before coming back, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and by the way, going from Caterpillar into Voices, the same thing happened. We hit the Voices, like, melody, like, and then we went back out and played for another 7 minutes. And that was kind of theme in the second half of the year. Yes. It's like we would touch on a melody that could have potentially triggered the song happening, and then we would bail on it. By the way, that happened in the jam at Solana that I'm talking about, The Voices into Taurus. Yes. We like hit Taurus and we could have just played the song, but then there was like another 10-minute jam before we actually played the song. So that was a thing that happens enough times in the second half of the year that it started to become like a game. Like, let's say what song we're in. Let's get the clock ticking on the song on for Rich Steele. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's switch over on the track listing and let the clock start running, and then go back out into a jam.
I love that.
You know, it happened a lot.
More of that in 2024.
All right. So more nominees.
Okay. August 13th, Bottle and Cork, Bassist Times Square. Now, Mark, you don't remember this, but this is, like I said, this is a jam that people have talked about nonstop since it occurred. Another jam that Rich Steele has rode really hard for, basically describing it as some of the best barber playing he's heard in 25 years, seeing the band, more probably. It's just an absolutely epic start to the show. It really is. Barber plays so well throughout that basis. It is really just like Barber kind of returning to his earlier style.
I'll go back and listen. Great.
September 16th, Empire Garage. I Man the Deal got the nod. As opposed to the Falling Space Bird, it was a toss up. That whole second set, we had to pick one segment, but there were so many moments across that set.
Yeah, I buy that.
September 22nd, we've said it once, we've said it a million times. Pabst Theater, Hot Air Balloon, Into the Deal. A moment that I've already said, I think will go down in history.
Yeah, one of the best.
Mark, you called this one two nights later in St. Louis, Facilios, Into the Inverted Twisted. And that's just, you know, by this point in the year, if you stepped over to the keyboard bass, you're getting nominated for Jam of the Year at this point, you know, from here on out, pretty much everything that had you stepping over, it had the side chain going. These are the moments that people were talking about. Another one of those moments, October 6th, Visco Land, Nughoffer into Shocked. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
That was disgusting. So good. And then of course, what we've already talked about, the just epic hour plus, did we say, Andy, of Dribble Confrontation, Inverted Confrontation from Visco Land Night 2.
I think the dribble alone was like 38 minutes or something ridiculous. Yeah, just massive.
And then finally, October 28th, Cap Theater, By the Time Digital Buddha.
Yeah.
It's a lot of really strong contenders there, and we didn't even get into some of the great moments that we've brought up today. Andy, you want to hit us with some of those great write-ins?
I would love to. This was an interesting category. Not a lot of write-ins. Far fewer write-in votes than the other two categories, perhaps because maybe we did a better job nominating committee. Maybe we nailed it this time. Or maybe it was just the sheer number of choices and people felt overwhelmed by it. But Mark, you're going to feel extremely vindicated by this. The number one vote getter for write-ins, 722 Solana Beach Voices Tourists.
Yes.
So the fans saw what you were doing. They're on the same page with you on that one. That got more write-in votes than any other jam. The Fifth Element jam got a few as well. Feels kind of like cheating to include the whole set, but I mean, it is all a big jam, so fair enough. But like I said, not a whole lot of consensus here. and most of the votes going to the nominated list.
Great. I'd love to hear the nominees. I'm going to guess that By the Time's number one, but let's go. Let's hear them. Number three.
You got it. Number three, 13%, 97 votes. According to the man himself, bloated, hard to listen to. The voices into I Feel Love from Pine Creek.
Yeah. By the way, the voices I Feel Love is the part that I love.
Okay.
The part that I didn't love was the jam before voices.
Okay.
Okay.
The one going into voices. I felt like it was a little disjointed, a little like, you know, maybe the mix was out of whack. The keyboards were too loud. Magna was playing on a synth, like at a, and it was coming across in a way that was not listenable to me. So that's when I say for like the listenability factor, but like once we got out of that moment, no, like the whole thing was sick. And the jam from voices, I agree with the voices into I Feel Love, but I still do think that the next voices that we did in Solana was better overall. And, you know, obviously people are feeling that was a enough. Special moment too. And if people are saying that wasn't that show, you're saying Solana Beach was written in as a show too.
Mm-hmm. People are feeling it.
Yeah, people really had a great time at that night. It was something was special about that last show of the tour. It was the last night it was our first real LNOT in a very, very long time. You know, we have little LNOTs, but this was like 3 weeks out on the road on buses away from home for like a long time. And like, this was a real last night of tour. Like that was it, we had champagne and like, you know, it was like, it was a special night. So I understand why people felt that way. So, okay. Number three, Pine Creek Voices. That's what we call it, by the way. We call it Pine Creek Voices.
Pine Creek Voices.
Like the Tahoe Tweezer. I mean, this was my pick until at least the fall tour. And it's especially, this is not what I seek out in terms of Biscuit sound. It's so loose. It's so exploratory. I tend to like a little bit more of the tractor beam mode stuff. But there, the achievement here is undeniable. I mean, it goes on a journey. Coming in at number two with just six more votes, 103 votes, Dribble Confrontation from October 7th at Bisco Land.
I believe it. I mean, that's
said a lot already. I mean, it's just a journey. And that it ends up in Confrontation too was so surprising because so much of it is so dark.
Refresh my memory. The tractor beam jam in that set was also in between. It was the jam out of Dribble and into Confrontation, right? I went onto the keyboard there in that set, right?
I think the tractor beam was during the Orc theme.
Oh, but it was the it
Did
was.
Did you do two that set?
I think with Bisco Land, there was it was a lot more restrained, and we're in the Vasilios from St. Louis, and then the By the Time from the Cap. That is the defining characteristic of the jam. With the Bisco Land Dribble, and with the other Bisco Land jam that was selected, the Nug Huffer into Shocked. There's so much going on. It's a much more diverse offering.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounds.
It wasn't the tractor beam thing being the biggest highlight. There was like coming into Confrontation, you know, like hitting that peak into the Confrontation peak, which we've tweaked over the last year. Like we've made some changes about the way that we play to hit Confrontation the way we've been hitting it. But the peak of Confrontation has just been absolutely mind blowing. Barber's just. You know, he's just like just tears down that moment, you know, in time. It's like, you know, one of the best things that happened. So I believe it. I wouldn't have been surprised if that had won the jam of the year, the Dribble Confrontation, because at that time, and this was true for a lot of these nominees.
Yeah.
At the time that we played the songs that are nominated, each of those were thought to potentially be the jam of the year. Like when we, like chronologically, as we went through the year and hit each of these moments that are nominated, that was the best jam of the year. I guess my question now is it going to be one of the, what was third place? That was third.
Voices I Feel Love from Pine Creek.
Okay, Voices I Feel Love. And then second place was Dribble Confrontation. So I'm torn here because something's telling me that people are going to vote the By the Time Buddha because it was the most recent thing. But I would be shocked if the deal isn't involved in this jam somehow in the number one. So it could equally be By the Time Buddha or one of the two deal ones. I'm going to say it's one of the two deal. I'm going to change my vote. I bet it's the deal is involved. All right, let's hear it.
Andy, rather than you saying it, just tell us how many votes it got and I'm going to play it. And Mark, I'd like you to talk to us while we're listening. I want you to tell us why this jam worked. Tell us what you did differently. Tell us why you think it connected with the people like it did.
Okay.
Well, this was the clear favorite. It received more than twice as many votes as the second place vote getter. 29%, 215 votes. Max, take it away.
So, what we were doing in a lot of these jams is we're kind of toying around with the sixth chord of the scale and the fourth chord of the scale, and then the first chord of the scale. And we sometimes will start on the sixth chord, go to the fourth chord, and then go to the first chord. Sometimes we'll start on the first chord and then go to the sixth chord and then go to the fourth chord. But a lot of these tractor beam jams are based off of those three chords, the one, the four, and the six. Sometimes we'll do substitutions, and I'll substitute the third for the six and just play one, three, four. And I could, generally speaking, move my notes around effortlessly with what these guys are doing. And just like anything I do seems to work when we're in this kind of a jam. But I can flip it from 1-6-4 to 1-4-6, and it's not going to, they just keep playing and everything just works. I could flip it to 1-3-4. I could go 1-6-4. I could switch to where the 6 is on the 1 and play the 4 and then the 1. In this particular jam, this is By the Time into Buddha, by the way, everybody. So in this particular jam, I added a fourth chord in, the three chord. And so I'm playing a chord progression, the one to the six chord, to the three chord, to the four chord. So what that means is we're playing, By the Time is in D. So we're playing, a D to a B flat, to an F to a G. And that F is the chord that's different from what we did in all the other tractor beam jams of this fall. And right when I hit it, right at that first time that the notes came in, and the first thing I did was introduce four chords, with the F being in there, which was totally different than the chord progressions that I've been playing for these guys over this kind of a jam. And I knew instantly that it was going to be the jam of the year. Like you can sense that it was the jam of the year while it was happening. Everybody was on fire.
Yeah.
The changes were different. It was unique. We hadn't ever played that. Like, we've played all the other chord progressions that happen in Tractor Beam jams had been played by this point. And so this was a new one. It was a unique jam that had never been played by the Biscuits before. Unique set of chord changes that are new to us, but like very simple and obvious, but like new to our kind of conversation. And then during the jam, there's these two stops. There's two breaks.
Yeah.
And you could hear now like what happens after the break. It's like the energy after these breaks, like this is what happens in electronic music. Before we got on the air, I played these guys a track that I'm making for a DJ Brownie project. And the track, like every other electronic track in the game, and I know this because I'm a professional DJ,
yes,
with CDJ 3000s in my possession. And now a song that I'm going to release. But all of the songs, you can see it in the, because when you're a DJ, you pull it up, the wave file goes in front of you. You could see where the drops are.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like the big wave file, then drops down to small wave file, and then big wave file. And there's at least two big drops in every single track.
Yeah.
And we hit one all together in this. And at some point, Barber walked over to his talkback mic and he said, "We should do two drops in this jam." And then at some point, you know, like we got there, like Alan said, okay, Alan did his thing and was like, okay, here's the drop is coming. And we all dropped out. And, you know, when we all drop out and Magner and Barber hit it and Alan starts winding up and brings us back, it's just like brings it to a different level. And it was a different jam. It was like the one, two intentional two drop jam of the whole tour. And yeah. And something about that second drop, I guess we should do more two drop jams, because the one that we did became the number one jam of the year. I mean, I think that it's something that the band needs to like look at very carefully. Like, yeah, hey, this is what worked. This is what the fans voted. Right now we have to shave a couple votes off for recency bias.
Sure.
So, but it was a drubbing by the time Buddha in a drubbing, yes, for the number one jam of the year. Well, guys, that's really exciting. I'm surprised that the deal didn't end up in the top three as the number one song of the year. Then it's like interesting how the songs of the year, you know, was different, but it got its due. The deal, yeah, got its due in that category. This is like in the Oscars when somebody wins the best actor award, but then his movie doesn't win the best film.
Definitely. You know, and I think to build off what you were saying, Mark, you changed two things. You added a fourth chord to the synth bass. You added a second drop, and suddenly you took a template that had been really working successfully all fall and leveled up. The entire band leveled up. So there you have it right there. You've got the data to back up the fact you did an experiment. You changed two variables in your jamming style from fall 2023 and produced results that the fans were overwhelmingly enthusiastic to just basically throw down and say the By the Time Buddha was the jam of 2023.
I love it. Well, what a year when we have such a huge well of material that is all being considered all across the whole year as some of the best stuff of the year. And, you know, I'd venture to say, you know, best stuff of the decade so far. And, you know, a lot of fans feel like, you know, because the vocals are better now than they used to be back in the day. And, you know, I just feel like, you know, it doesn't really necessarily matter what the fans think. I guess it does ultimately, but like, you know, I feel like this is some of the most consistent and best playing that we've done, you know, ever. You know, you have to look at the second half of 23 and put it up there with, you know, what was happening in 09 and what was happening in, you know, the best parts of 99 and 01. And so, you know, I guess when you kind of zoom out and look at our whole career, you know, we hit these peaks and they last for, you know, a couple of years, usually at the very least. And this one just started. So we're heading into a really good period of time. Now we have 30 something shows on the books, coming up in the beginning of 2024, like a ton of shows all over the country. So, you know, I'm excited to start working on Jam of the Year 24. And by the way, we're not done with 23 yet.
No, you got something in store for us. You've got all the data now. You've got three set lists to write. Now you've got all of these data points about the shows, the jams, the songs. This is going to be an interesting end to the year. And Mark, just to put a tag on what you said, I don't think that these are just jams that were good for 2023 or good for the Set Break Is Over era. I think these are good jams that will stand the test of time alongside other historic Biscuits moments. And for you guys to be having that almost 30 years into your career, few bands can really claim to be doing that. So congratulations on
Thank you.
A really successful year, the culmination of a lot of hard work. And it's a wonderful time to be a Biscuits fan. And I would imagine it's probably a pretty good time to be a Disco Biscuit too.
Yeah, it's a great time to be a Biscuit. For sure.
Well, Andy, Mark, I've already taken up too much of your time. Thank you so much for joining us here on Touchdowns All Day.
I feel like I'm taking up your time.
Well, listen, we could just hang up. We could stop recording and we could just talk Biscuits all night. I know we can. We'll see you guys at New Year's Eve, and we'll close out the year the way we did it the entire year with just absolute uncompromisingly intense jams, big smiles in the crowd and big smiles on the faces of the four guys on stage.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Max. It was an absolute pleasure.
Folks, welcome back to Touchdowns All Day. That was the illustrious Mark Brownstein interview. There's so much in there with Song of the Year, Jam of the Year, with how the band prepares for a show. I hope you guys learned a lot. I definitely could, you know, honestly, I wish Mark and I could talk about that kind of stuff all day long. That's why the podcast is great. That's why we're doing the Touchdowns All Day podcast, because it's an amazing way for all of us to communicate. We're going to bring Touchdowns episode 51 to you right away. It's got the DJ Brownie, Baba G, 8x10 recap from last Saturday. It's got Magner in his interview. He talks about the sound of the year. And honestly, you got to hear this because I didn't even know this stuff again. So it's incredible to hear Max and Aaron go deep about the, what does he call the sound, Max?
The awesome button.
Right. But if you don't know what Aaron's awesome button is, you do if you've gone to a show. But if you don't know specifically what he is or what that is, let me tell you, that is a must listen, episode 51. And then we have listener questions. And that is our episode 50, Touchdowns All Day. We're so happy to be back. And we're super excited to make a bunch of touchdowns for you guys and have a killer 2024. Thank you, Max, for coming on the team. As always, Touchdowns All Day is Osiris Media production. Check it out at touchdownsallday.com. Use hashtag Touchdowns All Day anywhere that you podcast, anywhere that you social media. The show is produced by Crunk Mike and Osiris Media. Executive producer, Dr. Vic Sobti. Mixing by Telescopic Audio. Design team, Matt Munns and Will Sozansky. Chris Cortez on the web. Special thanks to the Disco Biscuits, Andy Bazzani, and Mike Walsh at the BIP Biscuit Internet Project. Rich Deal, of course. Scott McClintock, Think Tank Dubs. I'm your host, John Barber. Have a shiny, shiny day, everybody. Have a great day.
mass communication.